Hello, mate. Scott Wells here for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And we are in jolly old England right now. We got started on Thursday night, loaded up over on United. And, of course, Thursday night means Magic and Martini Thursdays. So we did that over in the President's Club where we were waiting the flight over to Heathrow. And that was about an eight-hour flight, and once we arrived, we rented a car, drove on over to Cardiff, Wales, spent the night with our good friends John and Debs McGrath and their family, and then on Saturday, which is today, took a drive in the afternoon over around to a place called Weston-super-Mare, and it is for here. We are here for the Bristol Day of Magic. So, what's Bristol got to do with that? Well, we'll find out when we talk with them later, with the organizers. But this should be just a whole heck of a lot of fun. The weather has been just wonderful. When we arrived, it was about 18 Celsius, which I think is about 72, something like that. And then it got down to 10 Celsius whenever that we arrived over in Cardiff, and it's been quite windy, cold, and rather rainy, what they might call in Scotland, dreek. And then today, on Saturday, weather got a little bit better. Got a few things together for my show. I'm going to be the compere or the master of ceremonies for the Bristol Day tomorrow. So looking forward to that. So in the meantime, we after we got checked into the Royal Hotel, I moved into, I guess, what's known as the Oscar Munoz suite. So shout out there to Oscar, staying where you did when you were here, I guess, one of the corner suite that they gave us. So Kathy and I checked in there and then came on down the street to a Papa's Fish and Chips market. And so we're about to have our first fish and chip since we have arrived, and actually looking forward to that. Then we're going to get together with the rest of some of the performers, I guess, later this evening, having a little get-together, and maybe I'll have a chance to chat with some other folks. I'm excited about getting to see everybody, some old friends like Colin McLeod and some others that and Mandy Farrell and others whom I see from time to time throughout the year, and making new friends as well. So you guys are going to enjoy the trip. So hope you enjoy this podcast that is going to be from the Bristol Day of Magic. Until later, Scotty out. All right, Scott Wells from the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it is day zero. It's the day before the Bristol Day of Magic, and I have with me here right now Mandy Farrell. Hello, Mandy.
Hi there.
And the reason that I wanted to talk with you is because you're one of the organizers of the convention, Bristol Day of Magic. Now, I say day zero because this is actually a special event we had here this evening that hasn't happened before, because tomorrow it's all just a one-day deal starting at 9 a.m. Is that correct?
9:30, yes.
9:30, okay. But tonight, tell us about a little bit about the genesis of this idea. What happened? What all was...
It actually started a few years ago because my birthday is around now, and so one year I decided to have a big birthday party the night before the Day of Magic, and since then, the night before, everybody says, what are we doing? What are we doing? Isn't there a party? And so
they were just hanging around the hotel.
And, yes, yeah. That's right. So this year we decided to actually have a proper party in a proper place.
Right.
And a very, very informal competition.
Yes. With a prize bucket.
The prize, because we're at English Seaside, we decided that the prize should be a really delightful plastic bucket.
Right. I guess the kind of bucket that they would use for sand for the children.
A sandcastle
kind of thing.
Bucket.
Sandcastle,
yes.
Bucket. Exactly.
Engraved with a Sharpie pen.
Yes. It would rival the FISM trophy.
Oh, God, yes. Yes, of course.
And so we had a lot of contestants. We had about 10 people here on
yes,
the
city. Yes.
Everybody pays a pound apiece. And did they take the money as well?
They take the money from the bucket.
And the
yes,
bucket. So it's
yes,
not just the bucket.
No, and there were some prizes from dealers in the bucket as well.
That is
yes,
awesome. So speaking of dealers, let's talk about a little bit tomorrow. Now, this is the 53rd convention. Is that right?
It is.
Okay, that music's not too loud. So, yes, I was just checking. It's the 53rd.
Yes.
Now, my question is mainly about this being called the Bristol Day of Magic, and here we are at Weston-super-Mare.
Weston-super-Mare, yes.
Why this, and how far are we for people back in the U.S. who don't know how far Bristol
it's
is?
About 45 minutes away from Bristol.
So it's really kind of in the outskirts of town, so to speak.
In American terms, in English terms, it's a day's outing, nearly. But the reason is because the venue here is perfect for our magic convention. When you go and see it tomorrow, the rooms for the close-up are completely separate. We've got a
at the Winter Garden.
Yes, super venue, that's why. And also we've got a lovely theatre for the evening show.
I assume it started years ago in Bristol, or has it always been here?
It started in Bristol years ago, yes. It started many years ago in a place called Thornbury, which is outskirts of Bristol.
Okay.
In fact, I think it was somewhere before that even, before I was involved in it.
And I guess the reason to have it here not only is the Winter Garden is going to be a great venue, but this appears to be like a holiday camp, I guess, you know, not unlike Blackpool. Well, actually, this seems to be kind of a different, kind of like Blackpool from the standpoint, it's just where people come for holidays.
It's an English seaside, yes. It's a holiday resort.
It's a seaside, there we go.
Yeah, so there's plenty of hotels at a reasonable price, and it's not too bad here.
It's before the season opens, is that right still?
No, I think the season starts about April.
Okay.
Yes, and it's fine as long as you don't go for a walk in the sand, because there's quicksand.
There's quicksand. Yeah, you warned me about that, so I want to be careful when you walk, because there's like, it comes in, the tide comes in pretty quickly.
Very quickly, yes.
So you don't want to be caught in that either, then, as well.
No.
Now, how long have you been involved with this?
I was trying to work it out. I think it could be as long as 15 years.
Goodness, are you that old?
I'm older than that.
Okay.
I am.
So you've been doing this about 15 years now. As an organizer, you're one of the people who works with the talent, with the what all do you do exactly?
Yes, talent inviter, coordinator, and general organizer.
Okay.
Chief in charge.
So you're kind of the person in charge. Okay.
Yes.
Because there's Simon Lane. Who else is on your team then?
There's Tim Stracey.
Yes.
There's Andy McLaren and Dave Hickory, and we're the main committee.
Okay. Now, is this part or sponsored by like a Bristol Magic Society?
Bristol Society of Magic. Yes. And
okay.
So we're a subcommittee because it's a big event. We get 400 to 500 magicians during the day, registrants. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest one-day convention in England.
Wow. Wow. Bigger than what used to be Macmillan's, I guess. Macmillan's was a one-day thing as well.
But we've still always been bigger than that, yes.
Now, how many dealers will we have here tomorrow?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
Like
lots.
More than a dozen?
Oh, yes, lots. Okay. Lots. Yes, about 30, I think.
Yeah. Is the Bristol Club fairly large?
I think there's about 100 members.
Oh, goodness, that's a good size. Mm. And Bristol is one of the larger cities in the UK.
It is indeed, yes.
Like the fourth largest or something.
It's big.
Do you have any idea? It's just big. Okay. And
size doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. It's just the quality. And you have good quality people who
absolutely
come.
Absolutely.
And good talent. Somebody different every year and everything.
Yes.
Now, what makes this special? How does it stand out? Because I understand that there are a lot of conventions in the UK. So we have a lot of them in the US.
Mm. Well, people say it's a very friendly convention. I know all conventions say that.
Sure.
But people have said to me that it's very friendly.
Yeah.
It's also quite a relaxed day. People find it's a very different feel to a lot of the other conventions. So everybody seems to really like it. So that's good for us.
Now, you know, there's a convention in, right after the 4F convention called MANI, which is the Magicians Alliance of Western New York, MANI.
Yes, I've been there.
Okay, and that is a one-day convention. People drive in and drive out. And whenever I've been around for that convention, after the evening show, it is like a ghost town. All of a sudden, no one's left in the hotel. No one stays overnight. Is it similar to that? And people just drive in for this and then go back home at night, or do they stay overnight?
A lot go home, but there's always a few drinks in this room that we're sitting in now. There'll be drinks in here tomorrow night. We'll have our own zone again.
So will it be about, what do we have, about 80 people or so here tonight? It'll be about the same tomorrow?
So. And yes,
okay. So a lot of people will kind of hang around and leave on Monday.
Definitely,
kind
yes.
Of thing.
Yes.
I see. So what has been a challenge for you this year in putting this convention together as opposed to other conventions, the other years?
A challenge? Oh, gosh. Only that I'm very, very busy, and the people on my committee are all very, very busy people in their own right.
Yes.
And so it's been trying to fit everything in. Life. That's the main thing.
Into the schedule. Make sure there's time for it, because there's so much going on.
Yes.
Okay.
I know if you want something done, you ask a busy person, but I'm dealing with very busy people anyway. And
right.
It's finding the time to do it all.
And everything all takes place in the Winter Garden?
No, we've got a separate theatre for the evening show at the Playhouse.
Walking, or do they take buses?
Walking distance, yes.
Yeah. Everything is within walking
distance.
3 minutes.
Here. Yeah. 3 minutes. Everything within walking distance, yes.
Well, that's nice. Mm. And what is something that you're looking forward to in particular for tomorrow?
tomorrow night being over. Aside from that,
no, not at all. No, yeah. I'm more relaxed now that I've seen all the performers, all the international performers have arrived. I'm always a lot happier when we've got them and their luggage. That always makes me so much happier.
Yes, to know that it is to come with them.
Yes,
they're not stuck in customs or somewhere.
Absolutely,
right.
Yes, right. We've had it happen.
That's happened.
Yes. Oh yes.
What has been some of the horror stories? What's happened in the past? That
we don't generally have horror stories.
Ah, good.
No, it's all sorted.
Yeah, because there's enough people, I guess, that they can kind of help each other. You say it's a very friendly convention. If somebody's lacking something or they need somebody to run out and get this
or
that,
we'll sort it out. Yes,
yeah,
it's not
be able
a problem.
To take that.
Yes, no, I'm sure it will all be good.
Should be a lot of fun.
Yes.
Well, I'm looking forward to it as well.
Well, let me know what you think. Any feedback is good at the end of the day.
I will. Yeah, because it will be a long day, I guess. It goes from, you say, 9:30 until about 9:30 again tomorrow night.
Yes.
So like a good 12 hours. Excellent. Yes. Andy, thank you very much. Looking forward to tomorrow.
And you too.
That was Amanda Farrell, who is the organizer over here of the Bristol Day of Magic. It's for now at the Royal Hotel. Scotty out. All right, good morning, and it's day one of the Bristol Day of Magic. I guess it won't be a day two. It's just going to be a one-day deal anyhow. So anyhow, Scott Wells here, and I'm here with Eric pronounce it again.
Roumestan. Hello, everybody.
Roumestan. Is that kind of close?
Perfect.
Roumestan. Okay, well, I need no more French. Oui?
Oui.
That's about it. And so actually, you're not just part you're French, but Italian as well. So you kind of get one of each.
French.
Mainly French. Okay.
My wife's Italian, and my origins.
And you live
Italian.
Where, actually, then? In
Strasbourg.
Strasbourg.
Strasbourg. Yeah.
Which is what part of
the borderline of Germany?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
And the capital of Europe.
And I wanted to visit with you today because you're one of the performers. You're going to be lecturing and doing a workshop.
Yeah.
And
workshop with coins.
Yes. Tell me more about this. What are you going to be doing?
It's an approach of my coin magic. It's not a classic coin magic. It's, mm-hmm. It's how to load your spectator.
Load the spectator?
Yes.
Really?
Pockets,
okay,
and
sure.
Arms, and
yes.
Legs, feet, and heads. And,
with coins?
Just with coins.
Okay.
Just with coins.
Without them knowing it, obviously.
it's particular, but...
Now, once you have them loaded, I mean, is it just you come back and then take the coins away so they don't know it?
I have some coins, but you don't know that.
Okay.
And, okay, how are you, Gogo? And
right.
I load, and after I use the pockets, and for me the magic is better if the spectator feels magic in his pockets,
yes.
In his hand.
In his hand.
Yes.
So when he reaches in and finds it in his pocket,
it's
how
crazy.
Did that get there?
I think 100% of magic.
Yes.
For him.
Right.
And I use that in street, because I'm a street performer.
Yeah. Okay.
And I perform like that in street. Yeah.
You ever have people walk away and keep the coins and say, hey, wait,
come
back.
No,
no. I'm not finished with you yet. You got all my money.
That's why I use their coins.
They're, okay, they're okay.
It's better.
So you borrow the coins, and then when you vanish them, they vanish basically on their body, and they don't know until later.
It's a play. It's a game.
Sure,
it's a game.
I understand.
It's a game.
You know, I first got that idea from Apollo Robbins as far as loading a spectator. I was always thinking as a pickpocket that you take their watches, their wallets, or whatever. And then I think it was during the Essential Magic Conference that Luis de Matos, you know, was putting on, and Apollo was talking about taking your business cards or playing cards or whatever and loading them in spectators' pockets, and they don't know it. And then later,
it's the same way.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like I never thought of reversing it. You're actually instead of being a kleptomaniac, you're a maniocleptiac. I guess you're putting them backwards. You know, the other way, dyslexic. So
he uses pickpocket techniques.
Okay.
And me too. But the body language is very important. And I think I use these techniques in another way. I explain. Mm-hmm. If I put the coin on
the back of your hand,
the back of your hands,
okay,
you can see the coin, and after you have the prediction, okay,
right.
The coin. Yeah, good, very good. But if you put the coin here to load your hand after to show the coin in other way, another place,
yes.
You load just to use the coin after. It's not for production, just for just like a tuppet or a sleeve.
Yeah, you know, it's a way of ditching a coin, basically. That,
yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's another way. It's not a pickpocket. It's not pickpocketism.
Yeah.
Or French. In French,
it's you're doing very well for English.
Thanks. And but I use these techniques for just for me to produce. To produce in pockets.
The coins.
The coins.
And so you have them actually find the coin then later, or do you pull them out of their pockets?
I'm sorry?
Both. Okay.
Yeah, both.
And there's like time misdirection, I assume, so there's some...
No problem.
So, yeah, there's some time in between, and so that way there's more surprising.
Timing and psychology is very, very important.
Right. So in your workshop, you talk a lot about that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would think that, this the direction of trying to keep them looking someplace else all the time, you know, or being involved. So like with pickpocket, are you, you know, moving their hands and you're kind of, you know, touching them
just touch.
The time?
Just touching. Just touch.
Getting them used to your touching.
Yeah.
And then once they get used to that, whenever that if you drop something...
For you, it's normal. You like that?
Yes.
If I touch your shoulder, oh, good.
Yes, right.
You can suppose there's something.
You've entered their space already, and they become comfortable with you invading their space at that point because you become friends.
Yeah.
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 Interesting.
Exactly.
You ever do anything else with cards or mainly just coins?
No, just coins. Just coins is my magic.
Yeah. How'd you start getting into
that? I'm better with coins than cards.
Okay.
But there is just Reggie and Vittorio for them here. But yes, I have. But I don't. It's just a classic card magic, and I prefer coins because it's not usual for the public to use coins.
That's true.
In France, it's sure. Maybe in USA, no. But in France, yes.
The euros, coins.
Euros, no. Dollar coins, coins.
Oh, just
coins.
Any kind of coin.
Coin magic is not known.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I use this one, and I prefer. I like to feel magic with coins.
Right.
And it's very, 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 very deceptive, I think. We have, you know, the public is used to card magic.
Yes.
In closet.
Yes.
Coin.
Not so.
Not so.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I use coins. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful.
Now, how do you stop people on the street? You know, I've talked with other, like Cosmo and other people about how they... What do you do? I mean, you're not juggling coins or something. How do you draw a crowd?
No. I have a trumpet.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I played trumpets during 17 years.
Wow. Okay.
That's why I play trumpets.
Mm-hmm.
Or I use close-up magic.
Okay.
Depend. Or the voice. Hey!
Over here.
Magic show! And but I have two ways in streets. The busker, okay, with
right.
a magic show and a parlor show.
Okay.
And like that, with my table and with my trumpets. Okay.
Right.
Attract the public. Catch the public.
Yes.
Or just in close-up with the plates and for money. And
right.
that's all. I don't ask money. I don't like that. I don't like that. So, but I want the public want to give
to
me
give you money.
Money.
Right, right. So you don't have a hat. You tip me at the end to go around, or
In my parlor show, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, because 2 hours and after I change city.
Right.
But in close up, no. In close up, I have a plate and.
How many people can get around and see the close up when you're doing?
Oh,
that?
Sorry. One time I had in Paris, I had more than 500 persons.
Holy cow, one show?
Just one show.
Okay.
One show. 45 minutes.
Yeah.
20 minutes to,
on the street.
To place
yeah.
audience.
Yeah.
And 25 minutes of show.
Right.
And but depends. You can have
two people.
Persons,
yeah,
two people,
right.
and 100, 200. And,
depends how many people stop and stay
yeah.
and watch the show. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not important for me. I want just to have a good audience. A
sure.
good audience. Always good audience.
Yeah.
It's not a bad audience. You're bad.
Yeah.
For me.
That's right. Yeah.
But
the magician is bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But if I prefer to have two people with a good a good feeling
right.
in magic than 100 or the magic is over there.
Too much,
know?
Right.
Yeah, it's not important, but just a trick. Because very important, in USA, for example, mm-hmm. you have a coin.
Right.
Okay? You vanish the coin.
Okay.
And the people, wow,
yeah.
wow, splendid,
yeah.
fabulous. In France, is okay. Explain me, what do you do? How do you do?
And they expect you to tell them.
Yeah, really, huh. really.
That's interesting.
That's why it's very, very hard in France for streets because you need to be very clear,
right?
Very, very clear and clean.
I wonder why that is. You know, because in the U.S. we have, well, we had the mass magician. It seems like people are always wanting to know how things.
And you
are
have
done.
The culture.
And, yes.
You have the culture of magic. Us, no. Other arts, but
yes.
magic, not yet.
Yeah.
Not like you.
Mm-hmm.
Like you. We lose this dream.
You lose
in
the
France.
Dream?
Yes.
Huh.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's very hard. It's strange, but it's true. In France,
yeah.
you have a coin, you make it vanish.
And they wonder how.
How do you do?
And they expect
I want to do it for my kids.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a magician.
Yeah.
No, magician. No, it's not true. It's a trick.
Yeah.
You know?
So, well, I could teach you for, you know, give me some money. And
yeah, sure.
That's right.
But it's not my way.
That's right. No, no. But, yeah, we all learn someplace, you know, and I guess they want to learn. They'd have to start at the bottom, you know,
yeah.
read books and everything. Did you learn from an apprentice? I mean, did you learn from another magician, or did you
yeah.
mainly read books, or who impressed you first? Who'd you learn from?
My first
yeah, teacher.
First,
yeah.
first teacher, for me, the best was Tommy Wonder.
Yeah.
Tommy
okay.
Wonder. For all things.
His thinking, his subtleties, his direction, not misdirection.
Misdirection. His direction, but
right, right.
it's called misdirection.
Yeah.
And no, his mind in magic for me, he was the magician for
mm-hmm.
me.
He's can do it all.
Very natural, very,
yes.
very clever.
Mm-hmm.
Very clever genius for me. The second was for techniques, a lot of techniques, and to feel magic, it was Mike Lama.
Right.
And in France, Babel, with mm-hmm. guards,
right.
Babel and Billis.
And Billis, I haven't seen
yes,
him in a long
there's
time.
There's two schools in France,
okay.
Babel and Billis in guards.
Hmm. Okay. I guess it's kind of like in the U.S., you know, with Vernon and Marlowe.
Yeah. yeah. I stood I too, but a long time after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Tommy Wonder, yes, was for me the best.
Now, when you are drawing a crowd and you're doing a show, do you have like a set show or do you kind of do what we call jazz magic? You just kind of go wherever the
it's
audience...
Jazz magic.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, I don't have a set show. I don't like... I love to feel audience.
Yes.
And if it's a good audience, I give them the best. I give the best.
Right.
And if I don't feel, I give mm-hmm. the best. But
right. And it's your fault, not theirs. Exactly.
Yeah.
So do you work on the street a lot? Is that kind of one of your main sources of income?
A lot.
Okay.
5 months in year.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Whenever the weather's nice, you go out. Do you travel around the country or mainly
Europe,
just in France?
Europe, because I have kids and a family.
It's hard then to travel.
So, yes, for them, as 9 and 8 years old, so they are young.
Right.
So to if I go to street for 4 months, 4 or 5 months, it's very hard for them and for me too.
Right. Right.
But so that's why, just in Europe and France.
Right.
Now,
right.
In a few years, yes, I hope.
This is your first time you've been to the Bristol
yep.
Gay Magic, I assume, then too.
And in England.
In England at all? You've not been to England before.
No.
Are you going to be going over to London and doing any busking over there, street magic?
I would like, but I don't have time.
You're just going to be in and out? You're here for this and then back home? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, in Paris for two lectures.
Two lectures over
yeah,
there?
Yeah, lectures
okay.
and a selection of the National French close-up team.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a jury for the selection in 1 week.
Okay.
And I work in the Musée Grévin in Paris. I'm a magician in the Musée Grévin each month. And in Strasbourg after, in restaurants for the winter and the streets.
When you're working in restaurants, because I do a lot of restaurants also, do you work as a busker just for tips, or do they pay you an hourly fee and then plus tips? Or
One, I'm paid.
Yeah.
And the other, just with tip.
Okay. So get one of each.
I prefer.
Yeah. You prefer to...
Yeah, for me, magic, but it's strange. I'm a strange guy, you know. not because I'm French or other things, but I'm very strange because I have my link with money is very, very strange. I don't like money.
Okay.
For me, it's not a goal. It's not... Yeah. It's not my way.
Okay.
That, just magic. I have a career. I have a job. Mm-hmm. My job is firefighter.
Oh, firefighter.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I can take a break during 10 years in my career.
Yeah.
So in my second year. And so that's why magic is just for magic.
Just for fun.
Yeah, for fun. It's a business, but I need to work and need to hit.
But do you see that as a long-term career sometime in the future? You might want to do that full-time?
I hope. Yeah. I would like.
Yeah,
I would like. But just for tips, and I don't want to for lectures, for example, workshops, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's bad. But for the audience, I prefer the audience pay me.
Yes.
As you wish.
Of course, how much they think that you're worth.
Yes.
That's not a bad idea.
It's,
as opposed
it's
to you
idea.
Charging what you think you're worth, let them pay you what they think you're worth.
Oh.
Interesting. Eric, thanks very much. Well, it sounds like they're calling
so
over
much.
Here
Thank
then,
you
too.
So much.
Let me ask you one last question, too, because the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word.
Yeah.
So what is your magic word that you would, maybe something that you live by? It's not necessarily like abracadabra, or it may or may not be, but, I mean, what is your... Okay.
Really? It's true.
I like that. Okay. Not heard that one before. Great. Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Okay. Pleasure. Scotty out. All right. We are here at the afternoon sessions. A lot of things going on. I'm actually in the dealer's room, and there are several dozen dealers, I guess, you know, kind of around here from the UK and other parts. And I thought I would have a chat with the first winner of the Bristol Bucket. Is that right? It's what's called a Bristol Bucket. That's right. This is the 2013 Bristol Bucket. John,
congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And your last name is?
Billet.
Billet. B, just like B-I-L-L-E-T. Just like
Two T's.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, which is perfect since you're a metalist.
Yes, exactly.
And so, kind of give away the method whenever that you say who you are.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But you didn't do any billet work last night. You had some other ideas. I thought they're very clever and good presentation. Hence, you won out
Thank
of over
there
like
you.
A dozen people or so. And there were like 50, 60 people, I think, who were out in the audience. So it was kind of a cool thing. So when did you decide to enter the contest? Was it a last-minute thing?
Last minute. Thursday. Mandy from Bristol Society of Magic convinced me. She said, I'd like to see your act again. You should enter. And my wife actually forced me to enter. She said,
you're
not allowed to come home unless you enter. So,
so it's not just the thrill of winning the bucket, but also everybody threw in a pound apiece. So you got some money as well as some gifts from the dealers.
There's a lot of gifts from dealers. Lots of DVDs and effects.
Yep.
And vouchers, business cards.
Right.
So it's been...
Are you from Bristol, or where are you from?
I'm from a small town just east of Bath.
Okay.
So, about an hour from here.
All righty, gotcha. So you come to this convention fairly regularly, I guess?
No, this is my first year. I'm relatively new, actually, to the world
magic,
of magic.
Okay.
Yeah.
What got you interested?
Darren Brown originally, Andy Nyman, watching their shows. Originally, I've loved magic for years, but originally I never wanted to know how any effects were done because of that feeling you get when somebody surprises you.
Sure.
And about 3 years ago, I realized if I know how effects are done, I then have to learn and give other people that feeling.
Share that same feeling, right.
So that was my approach. I couldn't ruin any effect for myself. I needed to then learn it and present to other people, which I think I'm on that road to doing now, especially with my bucket.
Your first contest win.
First contest win.
So are you inspired to do more contests, enter into the future?
I think so.
Seriously?
Yeah,
I think you should.
Thank you.
You know, start to continue to find yourself, your own personality and everything. So mentalism is a thing that you really kind of prefer. They say inspired by Darren and Andy.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, absolutely love it. I think, for me, it's one of the very, very few areas of magic left where there's a real cloud over, you know, what you're actually doing, and people really, you know, people make their mind up what you're doing a lot of the time. They don't know whether it's the technology, the iPad, or whether I'm actually doing thought reading.
Right.
So it kind of leads people down different paths.
Right. So, and that was interesting that you were using an iPad then last night for part of your presentation. So you're interweaving modern technology with
methods that are 150 years old.
Right. Exactly. And so, do you get a lot of ideas then from books and DVDs and
books, DVDs, and actually non-magicians.
Non-magicians.
Yeah.
Such as
my friend Stephen here.
Yeah. Okay.
I bounce ideas off people who don't know methods and they don't know inner workings of magic.
Right.
And get their feedback on what works for as a presentation and what doesn't. And the feedback, you know, I get. And my wife's excellent at this.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure that they're brutally honest.
They are
you.
Honest. Like, if anything looks suspicious, they will point it out.
Sure.
And then I go back to the drawing board and try and iron out until hopefully everything looks innocent. And I think once it does look innocent, it's very difficult then for somebody to pick it apart if you've got nothing that looks kind of suspicious.
That's right. So you really haven't practiced or learned a lot of sleight of hand necessarily. I'm sure that you're adept at, you know, at some fundamentals.
Yep, exactly.
That are used in some mentalism things, like billet work or whatever.
Yep. I do some sleight of hand, but I realized probably maybe a year ago that rather than spending 6 months perfecting a move that I could never show anybody, I should put that effort into the story and the presentation that goes along. Because I think at least I can show people the result of my 6 months hard work.
Right.
And I don't have to keep it a secret.
And there are so many different styles. Some that are very serious, you know, like Mark Davis did last evening, that is something that's very dramatic, as opposed to something that may be more comical and whatever. You seem to kind of have struck a balance between the two.
I think it's a balance between the two. I'm trying to be myself on stage and not trying to be somebody funny. I'm not naturally a funny person, so there's no point me trying to go and wheel out a load of gags that just aren't funny.
Right. As long as you know who you are and don't try to do something it's not you, because when you do, it looks so much out of place whenever that you're on stage.
Absolutely, because it's not natural, is it?
It's not natural.
Out of place.
And that's what Di Vernon always said, you know, magic should be natural.
It shouldn't be confusing.
It should be very straightforward and be able to explain it, you know.
Yeah.
Did you listen to Colin McLeod's lecture this morning?
I did. I tried to get to every lecture that Colin does, and I think he's a wonderful mentalist. And
Absolutely. I've got all this stuff, too. He's just a wonderful mate, known him for years and years. He comes to the Mind Bench every year, you know, in Vegas, and so we get a chance to sit and chat a lot then as well. This is the first convention you said, the first Bristol Day
first
magic.
Bristol convention.
But what about other magic events? You attended others?
My first one was this year, Blackpool.
And, wow, what a difference. I mean, that was, what, like 4,000 people or something?
Yeah.
Okay. So you weren't at Blackpool when they had FISM last year, though?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, you just came to the regular Blackpool. You said regular Blackpool.
Regular Blackpool. Still a spectacle there.
Yeah. And what were your expectations, and what did you think after you actually went to that convention?
It was kind of mind-blowing. Well, actually, it was a bit of a... it was a bit depressing the day I left, because you're surrounded by so many people and so much fun over
thinking and
two or
creativity,
three days.
Right.
And the week after was actually very difficult. But actually, you know, I went from Blackpool to the airport and went on holiday, so that did help. But if I'd have gone back to work, then that would have been tough.
Yeah, I always think it's strange, you know, whenever we go to some conventions like, you know, Fectors, the 4F convention, that we are immersed in magic, and even after midnight they bring out coffee and donuts and people continue to session all night long, and you know, don't watch the news or television. Newspapers or whatever, yeah, they're kind of oblivious of what's happening. When you go back to the real world, it's like, what just happened?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I look forward to my invite to that one day.
I'm sure. Yes, you will. And so you had a good time, obviously. This convention going to be coming back, I guess, in future years.
It's actually I'm a part of Bristol Magic Society that arranged this day.
Okay.
So I'll be back every year.
Excellent. Very good. John, congratulations again.
Thank you very much, Scott.
The name of my podcast, by the way, is called The Magic Word. So let me ask you, what is your magic word? It wouldn't necessarily have to be like abracadabra or something, but it could be like your life's credo, you know, what do you live by? What is your motto?
Maybe a bit cheesy, but just be kind.
Be kind.
Be kind.
It's not cheesy at all. That's important. I think if you can't, you can't fake kindness.
You can't.
It has to be genuine.
Yeah,
you know?
It does.
That's
absolutely.
Good. That's good.
Thank you, John, very much.
Thank you, Scott.
So for the magic word, here from the Bristol Day of Magic, this is Scotty out. All right, we're over in the cafeteria or the bar or the deli or whatever we are. What would you call it? Cafe, I guess? Okay, it's cafe. It's close enough. And so we're away from the dealer's room, but I wanted to corner one of the dealers, Danny. Good to have you. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this book that you were promoting as well, because it sounded very, very interesting, called Disillusioned. Tell me something about the book.
Yeah, well, the book was published literally within the last 3 months, but it's been a product of something for over quite a long time now. The guy that wrote it himself, Carl Dean Metcalf, he published it literally within the last couple of months. And essentially it is about his life in magic as a professional magician over the last 35 years. Mm-hmm. He won the Young Magician of the Year Awards back in the 70s, and since then he's been working across the globe, across the world, magic galas, cruise ships, everything.
Yeah.
And
but that didn't happen overnight.
It didn't happen overnight. It was a gradual process, and it took a while for him to get to where he got to.
Yeah.
And literally under its own steam, it's managed to get where it did. And throughout the 80s and through the 90s, it was a very busy period for both him and his partner and his wife Claudine. And it took him everywhere. And the great thing with this book as well is it's a very honest and frank account of life as a magician.
Okay.
It cuts through all of the spiel and frankly the bull that is very present with certain performers and certain things that are said. So it's very honest. It's it is what it is.
Okay. And so it talks about just his road to become a professional magician.
Yeah, when he started when he was 15 years of age and how he built upon that and who his influences were and his methods and the way that he made things work within the capacity of being a magician when he was schooling himself and training himself up.
Mm-hmm.
Things that happened with his mentors and the jealousy and the arguments that occurred with a couple of those, to everything that he was doing with the competition New Faces in the 70s, right through to the period in the 80s in London and across, you know, cruise ships across the world, doing what he was doing with his partner.
Right.
And obviously taking us now into the present with an appearance on Britain's Got Talent, which is a major television show that Simon Cowell produces 3 years ago, and the fallout and what happened on that show, which was actually quite bad.
It wasn't a good thing, didn't it?
It wasn't a good thing, no. I mean, it was. They say that any publicity is good publicity, but this wasn't good. And the truth behind it is in that book.
So you're saying the fallout, was that something between him and his partner or something with Simon
Cowell? No, him and his partner are absolutely fine, but what happened was they were coerced and persuaded to go on to this television show.
That they didn't want to do?
Well, they did it because they thought it would be good publicity, but in the end it made a mockery of them in a really bad way. So now the truth behind that and what actually happened, because as you know, on television things are edited,
absolutely,
they're cut,
they
make it look the way they want to. And the reality and truth behind that whole little chapter on what happened over that 6 month period, the truth is in that book, because essentially Carl, he lost a lot of money doing that. You know, he was told that they would allow him to do certain things. Money was spent on a huge elaborate stage illusion, and in the end they never used it. And the consequences of that were seen by most of Great Britain. So,
so it made him look bad, so he felt like he lost business.
Yeah, it did. It didn't make them look particularly good, shall we say. So, you know, the time has now passed to deal with that in the way they needed to, and there has been a huge demand for him to write a book.
Okay.
So many incidents, so many things have happened to both of them since they've been across the globe working as professionals, from hotels blowing up and setting on fire to stage props crashing off the stage, money problems, fist fights, all kind, not between the two of them, but just the essentials, the weird, crazy things that happen on the road.
Are these things that are perhaps some pitfalls that people can avoid? In other words, if they read this, do you have to actually live through this?
I think at the end of the day, the book isn't, by any means, what has to be said is the book is not a textbook. It's not a book on how to do this, how to do that. This is
what to avoid. Because you're probably going
to
still have the same problems yourself?
Well, it's the same with any kind of business. I mean, I work as a professional musician, and I tour and play all over Europe and the world. And, you know, you can't go and study that kind of thing at a music school or a conservatoire or a university. You can't go to magic school and learn all of this.
There is no Hogwarts.
No, exactly. You've got to go out there. There's no Hogwarts, yeah. You've got to go out there and experience it, and you've got to walk away without getting paid a few nights in a row and walk away with injuries and bumps and bruises before you realise, actually, we're going to do that in a different way to make it work.
Right.
So it very much is a warts and all
tale of two people that have always been together, they've always believed in each other, mm-hmm. what they were both doing before they met, what happened when they met, and the amazing journey that they went on and they're still doing. That is what the book is about, essentially. But, I mean, the title itself, Frankly Disillusioned, the book is not aimed specifically at magicians or people within the industry. It's aimed at people with an interest in magic. And it's a very, very funny book.
It's a funny book.
It's a funny book, you know, and it has moments of sadness, and it's quite poignant, some of the things that happened. But essentially, it is a very funny and accessible book.
Now, this is a softbound paperback book, and it's available where?
Well, it was on Kindle to start with, but the demand for it has grown so much that now it's gone to paperback.
Okay.
So that's essentially where it's at the moment.
And you can purchase it now where? I mean, people online?
You can purchase it online. You can go on Amazon and you can buy it. You can go on the website, franklydisillusioned.com, and buy it through there, I believe. Or if you can find it, you can get it on paperback, which we're doing here today at the convention.
Right. And how much is it for paperback?
It was $9.99 for the paperback.
It's a good deal.
It's a good deal.
Yeah. And if it's available on Kindle, like, do you have any idea?
I think it is. I think it's between £5 to £6. I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure at the moment.
So do you sell it in another e-book? I mean, like a PDF or anything?
I don't know at the moment, but I think the thing with Dean is there is always a plan to get stuff out.
Sure.
So it, no doubt it will get out to a wider audience in another way.
Exactly. So this is the first publication.
It is a first publication, but what Dean has essentially found is he's got another 100 stories he could tell.
So there could be another sequel to this.
There could be another sequel because, I mean, the amount of work that they have done together and the places they've been, and they've been all over the world with their acts, and you know, they're in talks currently to go out and do stuff abroad again. They could write another book easily, you know. But again, it's finding who's interested in this at the moment, what they're going to think to it, and essentially, they probably could.
And the author again's name is?
His name is Dean Metcalf.
Metcalf,
yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And the new website and everything is current now is on lemagicianilluminaire.com. So all of his details are on there. Who he is, what he does, where you can find him.
All right. And again, that's through franklydisillusioned.com.
Disillusioned.com
on Amazon.
But
great.
Disillusioned in a good way.
Thanks, Danny, very much. Looking forward to the read.
Thank you.
Very good. All right. Well, now we get a chance to actually talk with the author himself, Dean Metcalf, right here. Hey, Dean, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. I'm glad that you're available then right now, and so that you're making this book available for the first time. It just recently was published?
Yes, it was. It came out as an e-book just at Christmas time.
Okay.
And it's just come out the last month, so that was about mid-April, as a paperback.
Right.
So, and it's about my life in show business over 30 years. It talks about, obviously, it's written good humour, but it's also a little bit brutal, but it's truly honest. I mean, we travelled all over the world, myself and Claudine. We were one of the number one attractions, certainly in this country and in certain parts of Europe. We
with illusions?
With illusions, okay. and a mixture of both a manipulative visual speciality act that featured crystals and flames and candles, much of which was quite original.
Right.
And also illusions, bigger illusions too. And as the nightclubs in the UK, as they started to die, which was the sort of mid to late 80s in the UK, there was nowhere really for us to work anymore other than cruise ships. We went to Europe and we managed to get into some really good European venues, but as you get older, physically, you lose both your looks and your physical ability.
And your knees.
And your knees, exactly. And your knees.
I know.
That's right. And you know, the bookers, the big bookers in the world of show business, especially from Europe, you know, they're normally looking for the better looking, the younger acts,
yep, right.
You know. So it's a struggle to maintain, you know, that kind of.
I always think of somebody like, you know, David Berglas, you know, who has that gentlemanly look, and it seems like that he has grown into, you know, he was.
You're dead right. I know exactly where you're coming from, and I agree with what you're saying. The problem was
he may be the exception to the rule.
Well, the problem was he was never a visual speciality like us.
Okay.
And so our act was always very visual, which is why we succeeded more abroad and in Europe than we did in our own country.
Right.
Apart, as I say, from when the nightclubs were there in the sort of the mid 80s. And so our act did rely on looks, if you like, a lot more.
Sure.
And we're still performing. We're still doing shows for corporates. We still go abroad. We're off to Cannes in August. And we're looking at a possible TV show that we have. So we still keep our hands in.
Good.
We're not working as often as we used to, you know. And the book, frankly, Disillusion, is about about really where show business is right now.
The state of the industry.
Yeah, so the state of the industry, which, you know, it isn't good, really. I mean, real live variety now is what's dying, and it's all become street magic. And, you know, guys with, you have to have the big tattoo and look where, you know, sort of wiry looking and scruffy and work the streets. And, you know, there should be a place for that. Why not? But it's sad when that's all there is.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's still some one or two wonderful shows in Europe, like the Le Grand Cabaret, which I'm sure you will have heard of, that feature top magicians from all over the world on their television show called the Le Grand Cabaret. I suggest, if you haven't heard of that, you look that up on the internet. You'll see some, you know, and just look at the way that people are dressed there live while watching those shows. And it's not something that we see here. And, you know, they want in the UK, they just want the quick fix now, don't they? You know, they want the guy, you know.
It's a lot like the U.S. also. It seems like that, like reality shows, everything. It's very visual and something that they want instant gratification.
Absolutely. And it's got to be something that, you know, is... And it also talks about, in my book, there's a small chapter related to Britain's Got Talent. They invited me on the show. I won't say they begged me, but they asked me many times to appear. And in my opinion, they deliberately did that with the intention of trying to set us up and trying to ruin us as entertainers on that show. And it's a very graphic part of the book. And I think even though people sort of get it now and they understand that they'll do all sorts of things on those shows to you, not just in England but also America, I think when people have read the chapter, they're still really shocked at the extent to what they'll go. And I can't obviously talk about that too much here now, but it's in the book. And I think people have found that quite interesting.
I think Simon
Cowell,
I've heard, doesn't care for magic to begin with, you know.
You know, there's a whole bunch of people, producers and executives, that I believe will be way over Simon Cowell. They'll be sitting down with Cowell and the rest of them and
tell him what to do.
Yes, telling them, you know, this is how we're going to play it this time. I mean, it's a bit like a horse race, isn't it? I mean, if somebody clearly is a winner, we as professionals, we see a lot of magic acts, and we know this guy is blinding, we know as magicians this guy, then that's too obvious. They must try to destroy that a little bit, you know, in order to keep you guessing. Oh my God, did you see that last week? You know, they were brilliant. But, you know, in singers, say in a singer's case, you know, they'd say, you know, the singer chose, you know, the wrong song that week. It's all deliberate. It's just a game. They're messing with you, you know. They're 50 years ahead of you, aren't they?
They say reality, but it's not reality.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. We say, you know, it's now, you know, it's really, we call it just, it's not Britain's Got Talent, it's everybody's got talent, you know.
Well, you know,
that's how they think they have.
I've talked about this with some of the magicians over in the U.S., and they have said that it used to be that it had some cachet with it, but if you had performed on America's Got Talent, it seems like now that more people than not have been on there. So it's not as big of a deal as what it was the first 2 years it came
out.
That's very true.
I think, you know, we appeared on BGT about 4 years ago. And I think, you know, on that particular year that we appeared on it, that I think people sort of believed everything that they were watching. They don't now, you know. I don't know what it's like in America, but certainly in the British papers, they're exposing the show more and more. Mm. But yet, strangely enough, I've been told, and I do believe that the media are all in with the show, I've yet to read any specific artist's story. You know, they'll waffle on about this, that, and the other, but they won't give a specific story about an artist, what's really happened to them.
But aren't they bound by contract that they can't talk about that?
They are, but it hasn't stopped me from talking about it.
I'm anxious to read the book.
You know.
That's good. All right, well, look, I'm going to let you go because I've got to run over the theater myself as well.
And so I love the phone. It's surreal. It's I've not seen one of these.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
I appreciate it. Dean, thank you. Oh, by the way, maybe my podcast is called The Magic Words. Let me ask you, what is your magic word? It may not be something that you would use truly as a magic word on stage, but it might be your credo, you know, your motto, you live by life. Or it could be a magic word, something that's magical to you.
Do you know what? My magical word, I can't reveal right now because I use it as a part. password for my bank account and everything. So I'm not going to give you that.
Fair enough.
And this is Claudine, by the way.
Claudine, pleasure. Very good. Yeah. I thought maybe his magic number was going to be Claudine.
No, it's not. And but Claudine, we've been working together now for about 30 years now. And you know, when we worked the nightclubs, and that's all obviously all in the book, frankly, Disillusion, right. as right. well. That Claudine, you know, our show was a very, in those earlier days, was a show that was very, you know, very raunchy and very sexy, you know. And
that's changed with the times.
With age.
And age too. That's true. That's what my wife says.
That's right. She can't wear the mini dresses or anything like before, it seems, as we get older.
It's interesting what you're doing here. So where are you off to next, then?
I'm going about for on a lecture tour. I go to the Magic Circle tomorrow, and then I got some other places I'm going to be lecturing about here for a few more weeks. Going to be here for about 3 weeks. So just starting with this. But I've got to go over to the show now, because I'm going to be the compere in this evening show. Yes, I am.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, for now, I will say that's enough. And so I'll sign off by saying this is Scotty. That was Dean Metcalf and Claudia.
Claudia.
Yeah, it's Claudia. Scotty out.
All right, Scott Wells back here with the Magic Word, and we're out of the dealer's room and just finished up with Shoma's lecture for this afternoon, and I'm here with the star of that lecture, Shoma himself. Hi, Shoma.
Hi, guys.
Glad to have you here, and so we had a pretty good turnout. A good lecture. I mean, this was a big hall, and I understand they have, I don't know, close to 400 registrants or something. Looked like almost everybody was here today.
Yeah, a lot of people came. I was very happy. It's always a challenge for me because I talk about a relatively theoretical topic,
sure.
the use of music and magic. And to see that people actually enjoy the lecture and they're having a good time, of course, it is a challenge for me, but it pays off when I see them being happy.
Right. You know, when you gave the lecture at Vectors last year, there was one of the guys from our city in Houston who had said, well, I hope I get to see him again this year, because he actually was so inspired. He's put music into his act. And he said, Shoma, you know, really showed me a lot of stuff and taught me some stuff, and he's changed his act because of the music aspect.
Well, if this guy is listening, then my message for him is that I just finished writing a book about the use of music in magic and in theater arts, and we discussed everything, including where to find music, what kind of music to find, iPhone apps for recognition apps, PA systems, practicing to music, royalty-free music sites, really everything in the book that somebody has to know about the use of music in magic. And on the top of everything, it seems like I'm getting lots of interviews from other people, including Xavier Mortimer from France. He's an amazing musician and magician, and combines the two fantastically. Mm-hmm. Andrew Goldenhirsch, Topaz helped me and gave me a fantastic interview for the book. Eberhard Riese, who was the author of Foundation, and most German magicians come out from under his hand.
That's right, he's the big teacher. Yeah.
So lots of people contributed to the book, and I think for anybody who's even slightly interested in the topic, this will have the answers for
him. Now you say you just finished it? Is it printed? Is it available? It's been published? Or?
It's being translated. I wrote the book in Hungarian, and it's being translated right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
to English.
To English, to Chinese.
For all 35 people who can read that, right? Yeah. They would be interested.
Okay. 35 Chinese? I think there's a lot more.
Yeah, maybe that's the way you should translate it into Chinese. I mean, that's for all the people in the world.
Yeah, so they can copy it. And
that's right, they'll buy one.
Yeah, and then
make copies.
The Chinese people are studying some of my tricks that hasn't been published.
Yeah.
And they're calling it what I'm calling it. And
same thing, and
same
advertising
thing.
And with your same logo and everything, probably.
And
I've heard that happen, you know, at FISM a few years ago when they had China.
You can't do anything about it. So
It is what it is. Yeah. That's right. Just recognize it and move on. I mean, that's unfortunate. So it'll be finished. When will it be published?
Hopefully in a few months.
Okay. So
hopefully in a few months. This year for sure.
Be a great Christmas gift.
Absolutely.
Now, I know this has been a labor of love in order to try to publish that, because I've published books myself. I know how long it takes to put them all together, and particularly when you get other people who are trying to contribute and then to try to put those all in together and get their timing and everything. How long actually have you been working on this? At least, I'm guessing, 5 years?
A long time, because when I first... about 3 years.
Okay.
When I first started lecturing on music, it started with a set of lecture notes. Mm-hmm. And then we talked with Stan Allen from Magic Magazine, and I did a series of articles with him in Magic on the topic of music. And then another year went by, and I started thinking, wow, let's take all that and much, much more, and let's make a book. So it's been really a long process, but I do think that we summed up pretty much everything on the topic.
And it's called what? What's the title of the book?
I still haven't decided yet. But
okay.
But it will be something self-explanatory. It will be hard to miss.
What's the working title? What are you thinking?
Well, the working title is Music in Magic.
Okay, yeah.
But this is not what it's going to be called for sure.
Okay. Yeah, it all sounds like, it'll have everything that you need. It'll be a hardcover or a softback?
Hopefully hardcover. But,
okay. Mm-hmm.
But I want it to last for a long time. And
sure.
When you write a book, I think you create value. And I know that this is not something with which you can milk the cow and make lots of money.
Right, of course.
But this is not the reason I wrote it.
Right.
The reason I wrote it because I love music. Mm-hmm. I love magic. I love performing on stage. And I do want to share so many thoughts to make other people's life easier and hopefully their magic better throughout this book.
Are you thinking about having it available in a PDF as well?
Yes, I am, in fact. Mm-hmm. Like an ebook of some
sort. Right, an ebook.
Yeah.
So that'll come out about the same time? Are you going to wait until after the hardcover sold for a while and then make it PDF? Or
still haven't decided.
On all that?
All the marketing
issues. Exactly. Because you're handling that all yourself, I guess, aren't you?
Yeah, at this point, yes.
Yep. Well, speaking of shows, then tonight that you're going to have two spots. You're going to have two turns on tonight's show.
Yes.
Both going to be silent to music, talking, or what are you...
Both silent to music, and the first will be my rope act, which many people have seen, I think.
Yes.
If you haven't, you can check it out on YouTube.
It's beautiful, yeah.
And the second will be my FISM-winning phone act, which I think most people have seen.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's on YouTube.
Yeah, that's on YouTube as well.
Yeah. We'll talk about the phone act and the FISM act. That, how did you develop that?
Well, I have a great DVD that
tells all about that.
Discusses all about that. It was a really, really long run. It was 9 years of development, prop development, music development.
You had a cell phone. You figured you wanted to do something with it. I mean, that was the genesis, I guess.
That's how it all started, actually. Yeah. And it took me really a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of money. People ask me. Sometimes magicians think. They ask me, "How did you get up? Come up with the idea of the act? Did you just get up and have
one day
idea?
Have creative?" Yeah.
Yeah. And this is not how it works.
Yeah.
It's years and years of struggling and idea by idea you progress and move forward, and finally. I don't think it's even finished at this point. I have ideas that I could add.
Yeah.
But I stopped developing it because I want to work on other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I never think that an act is finished. I think it's ready to be performed.
After every time, you're still creating.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. Small ideas in my head, but I prefer to work on other stuff. So
everybody has a different way of being creative and coming up with their ideas. Some people do wake up and they'll say, "Oh, this is it." They've been thinking about it, and it all of a sudden just kind of gels. Some night, or it could be after a certain performance that something happens in a show. It's like, "Oh, how to make that happen every time?" Or certain lines that are said, or something that happens. And so, do you feel that your creative process is similar to that, or is it that you actually just sit down and just try to come up with an idea and brainstorm with yourself? Or
In a way, I think it's very important to open your creative thinking, and the more you do it, the more easy it will get.
It's because you're exercising your creative muscle.
Yeah, there you go. That's the reason. I also think it's very important to sit down with other magicians to talk about it. Because sometimes I can't come up with a solution for an effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I have a very good friend in Hungary. And if he wasn't there for me, I would not be a world champion today.
Wow.
Yes, he's been my right hand ever since. And
is he a magician as well?
Yeah, he's a magician.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But he's, he chose a different path. He has he's my age, but I'm 28 years old. He's maybe 29. He has 3 kids, a beautiful family.
Right.
Whereas I'm,
single.
Doing magic, single, and traveling the world. But we're really good friends, and he helped me a lot.
Yeah.
The most creative I am before going to sleep and after waking up when, you're in this half sleepy thing, and when I'm doing my job on the toilet.
Okay.
I don't know why, but it helps a lot.
You do a lot of your thinking while you're sitting.
Yeah,
okay, basically. I understand. Well, it sounds like that you're both leading each other's lives. I mean, in other words, you would like to have a married life and something kind of, you know, that he's got, and he would like to have yours kind of, and so you kind of live out each other's, and so it sounds like a perfect complement to help each other, you know.
Yin and yang.
Yin and yang, exactly. And you've been doing magic then for at least a dozen years, I assume, or how long?
Yeah, long time. Mm-hmm. First magic kit when I was, I don't know, 6-7 years old.
Yeah.
But then I think I really got into magic when I was about 13-14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Saw the first card tricks, went down to the local club.
Sure.
And, well, you know how it is.
Oh, yeah, sure, of course.
Oh, my God, I can't believe that, you know, real magic exists. And then, well...
What was the first thing that you saw that seemed like real magic to you? I mean, I can tell you what mine was. I remember seeing cardiographic. There are a couple of things. You know, when you see that rising card, you know, it was on a piece of paper. I thought that was fantastic. And I remember seeing John and Cornelius also doing something that was a FISM act of his that he had won. A friend of mine from San Antonio, Texas, and he had seemed like, you know, was using a FISM flash, which I didn't know of at the time. And it was just the flash that happened, you know, in this crystal bowl or something. It's like magic happened at that moment.
Yeah.
I thought that is just cool. There are those moments, you know, in your life that just kind of trigger. You know, what was it for you? What do you remember?
Well, for me, the first trick that I saw that I remember I couldn't figure out and in the magic shop, and it had a great impact on me, was the linking rope rings.
Oh, yeah.
But the first real magic experience was when I saw David Copperfield's Grandpa's Aces routine on television.
Interesting. Uh-huh.
And for me, I don't know why, I know that's only a card trick, but yeah. I watched it 100 times. And the fact when
he... And it fooled you every time.
Every time. Every time.
Yeah.
And when he does the color changing with his hand, you know, far away from the cards, and it changes, and his beautiful hand motions and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting there, and I was trying to figure it out, and I had no idea how it was done. And I remember that being one of those really, you know, unique moments in my childhood.
Right. They kind of said, that's what I want to do.
Yeah. Because, you know, I saw his illusions, and I saw many other magicians perform excellent magic on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a card trick was so much closer to me at that point. Like, I knew I couldn't, you know, get an illusion and three beautiful ladies and for different reasons.
Right.
and that card trick just blew me away and sucked me in completely.
Well, the fact that David Copperfield also uses a lot of music to move people and to create drama and everything, I think you had to have been at least subliminally or subconsciously at some level influenced by his use of music as well.
Most likely. But I love Peter Gabriel and I love Genesis.
Yep.
And I know for a fact...
And he uses a lot of their music, too.
That, yeah, he does too, and he used a lot of their music. So I think when you hear a piece of music that you like on stage, it immediately creates an emotional, you know, connection between you.
Which was my next thought I was leading to about creativity. If you listen to music, then do you happen to think of an effect or something that you can do, or is there a song or something? It's like, oh, I can, like for an example, like with, you know, Sean Farquhar, you know, and using Sting's heart, what is that, my heart?
Shape of my heart.
Yeah. You know, when I first heard that song, it's like, I'm going to work up a card trick. And I was fiddling around, and I never really put together the whole routine. It was just kind of in my mind. And then he did, and it's like, I'm never doing it. You know, it's ultimate.
Yeah, I think, see, this is a funny thing, because I think what Sean did, at least 100 other magicians thought about.
Exactly. Or me being one of them. Exactly, everybody.
But nobody does anything, and he did.
And he did, exactly.
Same thing with me. When I started manipulating with cell phones, many people came up to me and they said, well, I had this idea of doing something with cell phones and manipulation with the cell phones. But nobody really went through the trouble of getting props made you know, stage props made. And I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only 14 or 15 at that time, but I did go through the trouble, and my first set of cell phones looked like crap, really, that I used on stage.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, everything evolved, everything changed. And
well, it's just like with Murray Sawchuk, you know, when he was doing a CD act.
Yeah.
You know, he thought, well, I want to use CD. Well, CDs are kind of outdated, obviously, now. And I don't think it would be quite the same with using flash drives. Or, you know, with him. It's like from the stage, hey, look at this flash drive. But the fact that the same thing there as well. I've heard him say that, you know, he's had this idea, and when he shows people, said, well, I had an idea of using CDs too. Yeah. But he went to all the work of putting the things together and actually making an act out of it and everything.
Yep. Well, there are, I think, especially CDs. Like, CDs are one of those things that you can just pick up and do magic with.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Danny Cole, for me.
Sure.
His CD act, first time I saw it, why didn't I think about this? the different tunes appearing as the CDs appearing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Han So-hee, the third generation of CDs from Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my good God. I mean, up until this day. And I've been in competition with him for most of my competition years.
Mm-hmm.
And I... admire him so much for what he did with CDs.
Speaking of competitions, are you going to continue to compete? I mean, you've won FISM. You kind of like...
No. After FISM,
you're done.
Yeah, I was happy I was done.
Sure. No,
the funny thing was, after winning FISM, you know, I went home, I sat down, and I thought, what now?
Yeah.
You know, this was the thing. I was competing.
Yeah.
I was climbing the mountain.
Where do you have to go but down from there, you know, I would think?
Well, I prefer not to think that.
Well, no. What I meant is, of course, so I mean, after you've gotten that, I mean, what more do you have to prove, you know?
Well, I think with time, you start thinking and you realize that what it is, you know, magic is not a competition art.
Yeah.
It's a real art in which we have to entertain people and which we have to bring joy to their lives. So in this way, FISM, what it did, it opened a dozen doors for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After FISM, I visited so far 31 countries, over 120 trips abroad in 4 years, which is a lot. And in fact, sometimes it's really tiring, but it's magnificent. And I really got to see the world.
Meet a lot of people, see a lot of things, that's fun. Mm-hmm.
And it has been amazing. Mm-hmm. And thanks to FISM, this could happen. And, of course, thanks to a lot of practice I did at home. But
that's right. It's not easy. You just don't, on one day, say, I think I'll go to FISM and perform and win.
I never
and do a lot of other things.
I never thought I could win.
Well, how many competitions had you gotten into and before you got into FISM? I mean, you have to...
I started competing in 2000. In 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And I first prize in the junior category on the Hungarian national competition.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we had three people competing.
Okay. Don't need to know that part.
Yeah. And then for 9 years, I did lots and lots of competitions all around the world. I did the World Magic Seminar, and I won the Golden Lionhead Award. I did Switzerland, and I won the Golden Rings. I did most national conventions in Austria and Italy, where I won first prize as well, in France. You know, it's been a long run, but and really competing is a very different type of being nervous when you're competing
for magicians.
Yeah, for magicians, it's always like I really prefer doing gala shows at this point because they're much more
people.
Easier.
Yeah,
and for magicians
at
more.
Conventions and things like why is that? Why do you feel more at ease? Because you don't feel like that there is something to lose.
It's well, when you're competing, the pressure is so much more. Like when I did FISM, okay, the FISM is top of competitions, and but I was so nervous for a week that I felt almost like crying all the time. I felt like, you know, an apple in my throat, and it was horrible. I didn't know what was going on, and then I realized this is the nerves coming out this way.
Right.
And I don't want to. Like FISM was one of my most beautiful weeks in my life, and one of the most horrible weeks in my life. I'm very happy I did it. I'm even more happier when I won, but I never ever want to do anything like this again. So.
Yeah, well, the fact that you won makes it just a high point, but I think a lot of people who may have lost would have a, you know, a double feeling of
yeah, probably.
The
probably.
Fact that they had put so much effort into it and then didn't win, you know, and some people don't want to come back and do that again because of how difficult that is, and I would think, certainly. But what would you say to young people who are wanting to do magic? Would you encourage them to enter competitions?
Yes, absolutely. I think going to competitions is a great way of to get excellent feedback from professionals, from jury members, excellent opportunity to meet other magicians at the conventions, and really the world of magic opens up as you go to more and more conventions and compete more and more. I do not think all advice should be taken, but you should, I mean, young people should listen to all the, you know, critique that they can get and then filter from there on.
Filter, yeah, that's a good point. I think you should be open to change that as necessary, the right people who are making good suggestions, but you could hear so many different ideas that it could just kind of make it worse.
And even right people sometimes, like big names, said things to me that I did not agree with, and I didn't change.
Yeah.
And I'm happy I didn't.
Yeah. But you appreciated what they were trying to do.
Yes, absolutely. And they might have said, you know, other good things as well.
Sure.
Like, for instance, when I do the newspaper tier and I do the leaning forward with the lean plate.
Yeah, the lean, right.
The lean, I mean.
Right.
No plate. that was suggested to me by Josh Jay. He saw my act and he said, what if you did the lean? And I said, oh, great idea. Let's try.
Yeah.
And
added a lot more to it.
A lot more to it.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's one of those little things. Kind of. Well, I mean, there's more to it, obviously. But to the audience, it's like it's one more thing that
that adds more than just 10%. It's something that people will remember also.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes those little things that we might think of as a throwaway, and not that that's a throwaway by any means, but a small portion of your act, I guess I'm saying, in conjunction with everything else, but it's the small things that people seem to remember and make the whole act stronger.
Yeah, that's true.
It's the glue that keeps it together, I guess, kind of a thing, you know, that that makes the bond so strong. Back to this convention at Bristol Day. This is the first time, I assume, that you've performed here at this as well.
First time.
Have you been to the UK and been at other conventions here? Or like the?
Yes, I did Ron's Day back in 2008 before FISM. Mm-hmm. I did the British IBM in Southport a couple years ago, and now, for the third time, I'm back. Well, I did a couple of TV shows as well, including Penn & Teller's
Fool Us. Oh, here. Okay. What did you do for them?
I did a extract of my phone act without the phone booth, without phones really.
So you didn't fool them, I guess.
mainly the newspaper.
Okay.
It didn't fool them, of course. But I'm not that mentalist type of guy. I think they wanted me to show people a good time, and that's what I did.
Right. Did you get some more shows as a result of that? I mean, by having that kind of exposure, do you get booked? I mean, people who see that and say, "Hey, we want to have Shoma come back and do something for our company or something."
I guess. Yes. I mean, you never know where the where people see you.
That's true.
But I'm not complaining. I have lots of work to do.
That's good. That's good. All over the world, I guess.
Yeah.
As a result, you think of starting with a competition and continuing to gain confidence, because I think you should probably, you know, my advice always to young people is to work as often and wherever and whenever you can, you know, and not just young people, but people in particular who are getting started into magic. I think it's important that perform. You know, our art is just that. It's a performing art. You know, it's some people collect, and that's fine too, but I think that we should be getting out there and showing people. I don't care where it is, but as often as you can, because that way you learn what works and what doesn't, and you get feedback immediately. It's like, oh, I saw that, or you get some applause or laughter or whatever. But I think it's important to perform.
That is so true. And when you said earlier that some magicians go on stage and have a good line and it, you know, strikes an idea and helps their creative thinking, it's very important, because sometimes you're on stage, sometimes your routines can really develop while you're in front of an audience.
Right.
And practicing isn't only standing in front of the mirror at home, but practicing is being in front of an audience as well. Mm-hmm. So I completely agree with you on this topic.
Now, wasn't it you and your lecturer, or I might be confusing it with maybe Eugene Berger or someone, about rehearsal and scripting?
I don't know.
No, I
don't.
I think it might have been him. He was talking about that, the difference in the importance of scripting and then actually rehearsing using that script.
It is very important.
Yeah.
I, for instance, in my lecture, it's an hour and a half lecture usually. Mm-hmm. I know all the sentences I'm going to say. Maybe I say them a little bit differently. But
you've delivered it so many times, you know what you're going to say next.
Yeah. And
interesting.
I held a TED talk in Hungary 2 years ago. And it was called 10 Things Magic Taught Me About Life. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like a motivational speak with magic tricks and with stories from my life. And there as well, I knew I only had about 18 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I made sure that I knew everything I wanted to say, and every sentence had a reason in there. So scripting is very, very important. I completely agree with Eugene.
What would you say? How would that coincide then with melding it with music?
With music?
Yeah.
Well,
you need to practice with the music as well, I assume.
Oh, hundreds, thousands of times. Especially if you do what I do, use tons of sound effects and musical, you know, gags in your in your performances. It's crucial to be able to do it, even if they wake you up from your sleep.
Right.
You know. Because, you know, sometimes bad things happen on stage, and only if you're completely prepared and practiced can you solve those issues on stage.
Good point. Good point. Oh, well, listen, in wrapping up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word that you live by? What is your credo?
My magic word is anything is possible. And I don't mean this to magic. I mean this to life, primarily.
That's what I mean, for life. So anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
Very good. Shoma, thank you very much. I appreciate all of your comments, and I'm sure the rest of the listeners do as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for now, Scott. Yeah. Well, we're still on day one of a day one convention, I guess. And we are backstage before the evening gala show, and I am here with one of the stars of the evening, Mr. Arthur Benjamin. Hello there, Arthur.
Hi.
I'm glad to have you as one of my guests over here on the podcast. Oh, it's a nice snappy tie you got with numbers, which seems to be appropriate for you. Is it a little calculator and everything?
Yeah, it's my cheat sheet.
Oh, I see. I use your mind for a cheat sheet.
Well, if I forget anything, the numbers are somewhere on, yes, the, okay, on the tie. Yeah.
Arthur is, if you don't know, the mathematician, and you got first interested in numbers when you were quite young.
Right? Yes, ever since I was a little kid, I've loved playing with numbers. And
yeah.
Parallel to that, I had an interest in magic, and mm-hmm. later on I combined the two hobbies of mine, if you will.
Right. And are you more interested, like, in the outcome of what these numbers will get to? I mean, or just the puzzles? I mean, are you interested in puzzles and kinds of things?
Well, I am a professor of mathematics, so I not only do I enjoy the process of calculating, but, oh yeah, the whole structure of numbers, the whole logic. I enjoy puzzles. I certainly grew up on Martin Gardner.
And, sure.
As a kid, I loved the fact that you could take a problem, do it lots of different ways, and if you were careful, you'd always get the same answer. And I just thought that was... I just found that consistency of numbers to be beautiful, and I still do today.
Because they're always perfect, I guess. They always have an answer.
Yeah, and yet at the same time, they're very. You can be very creative with them. There's more than one way to solve a problem, mm-hmm. and I think the process of solving the problem was always very interesting to me. Just as in the same way that, as magic,
it's magic
is,
right?
You know, there's more than one way to accomplish the same effect, mm-hmm. and some of them are pretty elegant, and some of them are brute force, and some of them involve gaffes and gimmicks.
Right.
Some of them are pure sleight of hand, and there's reasons to appreciate all of them. And I think the same is true of mathematics. There's usually several different ways to go about solving a problem.
Right. And when you are teaching, do you find, I've heard this before, that there are more male than female, you know, those who are interested in math. I mean, that I've heard it said that girls don't do as well early on in math for some reason.
You know, actually, early on, it's about the same. If anything, the girls seem to have an advantage. But somewhere around middle school, I think social pressure takes over, mm-hmm. and it suddenly becomes unattractive to be too good at math. Mm-hmm. And maybe also there's a little bit of an intimidation factor of guys who are more inclined to blurt out answers, and I confess I was a blurter, yeah. from way back, even before they've fully thought through the problem,
yeah.
whereas women tend to want to be a little more sure before they commit themselves to an answer.
Because they don't want to look silly.
Exactly, whereas guys, you know, we don't, yeah. exactly.
Right.
So there's a little bit of an intimidation factor there too, but I don't really think that there's much of a genetic difference, mm-hmm. in between
it's just a social
men and women.
Thing, you think?
Oh, very much so. I mean, you can look at other countries in the world,
mm-hmm.
and find that just as many women, you know, high performing in mathematics than men, but
here it's different than
here. Our yeah. culture is that way. Yeah.
And so you teach then at Harvey Mudd
at Harvey Mudd College, mm-hmm. In California,
right? In engineering.
It's an engineering school. However, I'm a professor of mathematics there.
Mm-hmm.
So there, you can major in math, computer science, physics, chemistry, biology,
right.
or engineering.
I assume your favorite TV show is Bang Theory.
Oh, Big Bang Theory. I thought you were going to allude to Numbers, right? The show.
Of course, yeah.
That was another good show. So yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of
yeah.
Bang.
And so when did you actually figure out that you had this proclivity?
You know, I've loved numbers all my life, and I've been...
Did well in school? It just kind of came naturally to you?
They very much came naturally to me, and I would come up with my own shortcuts for doing math problems mentally. I would look at a problem, I would try to do it a few different ways and
mm-hmm.
find which way got me to the answer fastest. And it wasn't maybe until about eighth grade that I realized that some of the methods that I came up with were not going to actually be taught to us in school.
Yeah.
So I just figured, oh, they'll get around to showing people
right.
this eventually. And I remember one day I left, the teacher left an answer on the board. It was solution to some algebra problem as 108 squared. And I blurted out, being a blurter, well, that's 11,664. And she looked down and she looked at me and she said, "Why, that's right. How did you do that?" And I showed her my method. "Oh, I did 100 times 116 added the square of 8 and got 11,664.
Yeah, shortcut. Yeah.
And she said, "Wow, well, that's right." And she knew her algebra well enough to see what was going on.
Yeah.
I had discovered it through examples and number patterns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she said, "Can you prove why it worked?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, it works for big numbers, small numbers, negative numbers, even fractions, you know." Anyway, so, and you can learn a lot just by studying number patterns. But that was, that's when I guess I first realized that maybe some of what I had figured out was special. But it wasn't until about 3 or 4 years later. I went through high school doing magic shows for children's birthday parties, not doing math at all. I was the Great Benjamini doing Forgetful Freddy and the Chinese linking rings and all that, and making the kids laugh by falling on my tush. And when I started doing shows for older audiences, my father said, I started to get into mentalism because I thought, you know, for someone that likes to think and talk, that mental magic had a very strong appeal. So I read Annaman, I read Corinda, the colored books of mentalism, and all the classics. And my dad said, "Well, you know, if you're going to do that, why don't you do some of the number stuff? Because I think that's real,
sure.
And I think every bit as impressive as the fake mind reading stuff."
Right.
So I said, "Okay, well, I'll give it a try." And to my surprise, it got the best reaction of the show. So I said, "Wow, if they like that, imagine if I could do bigger problems or faster. And one thing led to another, and it just expanded. So that's my second full-time job in addition to my college teaching is presenting this.
So what I hear is that when people say, they were looking for something, and say, "Well, it was always in the last place you looked, you know." And so when they find something, why would you keep looking? Because if it was the last place you look, I mean, there's no sense in continuing to search.
Uh-huh.
It's saying to me, what you're saying to me, is that you have found it, but there is another way of going about it. In other words, that was not the last place you looked. That was the last place that got the correct answer. I'm going to find another way of getting that correct answer. Because most people would stop to say, "Okay, I have solved that problem. I'm moving to the next problem." Mm-hmm. Instead, you're staying with the same problem, right, saying, "I can solve that a different way."
Yeah, yeah. I just thought it was cool that that all paths would lead to the same answer.
Yeah.
I mean, just like, isn't that neat?
I've seen some magicians like Sean Farquhar, for an example. When I heard his lecture that he has poker chips, and he's got a couple of ideas, and then he's got a couple more ideas, and then something else. I mean, it's just, he doesn't stop thinking about a prop.
Once he has one solution, he doesn't say, "I'm done."
That's right.
He says, "Well, maybe we can refine that, or what if we change this?" Or maybe in the course of a performance, somebody says something, or you ad-lib something, you say, "Ooh, that got a good reaction."
Right.
Let's build on that. Let's see what.
So that's what I'm talking about, the creative process. You know, different people have different creative processes that they go through in order to find something. And so when you do that, is there some point you're finally thinking, "Okay, my brain is finished. You know, I found 10,000 ways of solving this algorithm." So at what point do you finally say, "Moving on"?
You know, I don't think I've thought of new ways of multiplying numbers in the last 25 years or so. I mean, I'm still using the same
methods.
I guess
it's like a double lift. I mean, there's certain things.
You have a toolbox,
you're
playing with those tools. I mean,
it's
there's
just a
no
of which
point
tool
in
you use.
If you say, "Give me a couple of two-digit numbers to multiply," I can probably find 3 or 4 different ways of doing that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like I'm discovering even newer methods for doing that. I'm just using, I'm jazzing it, if you will.
And when you're teaching, you have a DVD that is available. You sell, you know, back of the room sale kind of.
There are, if you're interested, you can come. There's a company called The Great Courses, also known as The Teaching Company, and they have hundreds of courses, DVD courses on, you know, history, science, philosophy, mathematics, when you name it. And I'm happy to have created 3, and as of this summer, 4 DVD courses for them. And the 2 that would probably be of most interest to magicians are the one on the secrets of mental math, where you can do, I teach you everything I know about how to add, subtract, multiply, divide, how to calculate the day of the week of any birthday, the phonetic code for memorizing numbers, but it's very practical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then this summer, just coming out this July of 2013, is a course on the mathematics of games and puzzles. So the mathematics that underlies, you know, casino games like roulette and craps, the mathematics that goes into playing expert poker or backgammon, games you can't lose. Magicians are familiar with things like non-transitive dice, you know, things like that. How to solve any Sudoku, how to solve a Rubik's Cube.
Wow.
You know, these are skills that are useful as a magician and also as a mathematician. And I hope people will just find them generally fun and useful, and it's a great way to learn some mathematics along the way.
And so, yeah, those are things that are available then. And if you want to purchase something,
oh, you just go to the website of the Great Courses.
TheGreatCourses.com. Yeah. Okay, got it. Now you say you have two jobs. So you're working then as a teacher?
Well, okay, three jobs. Okay. So I have, in addition to I'm a college professor, I'm a mathemagician. I do about 50 events per year, mm-hmm. and I do. And I've been creating courses for the Great Courses,
right.
that have been very, very well received. Hundreds of thousands of these have been sold.
I'd say you'd be pretty selective then, certainly, in trying to determine which of those 50 shows you're going to be going, because I think that you'd be pulled different directions. I mean, this is the first time I've seen you at a convention, mm-hmm. a magic convention.
You know, I haven't. I come if invited, but I haven't really pushed to
work at magic.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a few, but not, but mm-hmm. really not that. Many. I'm based in Los Angeles,
yeah. Yeah.
and so there isn't like a big LA.
Are you at Magic Live? Maybe.
I've never been. Okay. Often it turns out that I'm. Well, part of the problem is I have a family. I have two daughters, 11 and 14.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's right. Scratch that off
yeah.
the end. my wife shouldn't hear that. No, it's just that because I do so many out-of-town shows that I can't in good conscience ask my wife, oh, would you mind if I escape to this magic convention?
Sure.
There, because I'm away so often.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I love to perform for magicians. But yeah, I would say magic conventions wise. Oh, what was the, you know, if I've done three or four in the last 10 years, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, not that many. But please invite me.
Yeah.
I would love to. I'd love to present.
And going back to Martin Gardner, I assume you went to the gatherings for Gardner.
I've gone to about three of them. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and I love those, and it's a great gathering.
Yeah, and when Martin was alive, I guess you got to be friends with him.
I did.
Percy Diaconis.
I did, and Percy Diaconis for sure.
And he's a mathematician
of the highest caliber.
Yeah.
No, he's he is. I mean, at the very highest strata of,
yeah.
I mean, he's been editor of major research journals and statistics. He's, a genius. And I think I've heard him quoted to say that he feels that he's even more knowledgeable in the field of magic than he is in the field of mathematics and statistics. And yet, knowing where he is in mathematics, that's a scary prospect.
He probably has a dietetic memory or something. Maybe.
Oh, he is. I don't know how he does everything that he does. I mean, I think there are several of him running around, and we just don't know.
Well,
it's twins, you know.
Doppelganger.
Yes.
So, what are your long term plans? What would you like to do, Arthur? I mean, as far as like 5-10 years from now, I mean, you're a young guy. I mean,
oh, gee.
I mean, you want to continue to teach? You want to be a professor?
I love teaching. I love performing. I love that being a professor gives me the flexible schedule that I can perform.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken me all over the world. My wife and my daughters have been able to come to some of these international
That's
performances.
Nice.
It's I might do a DVD course on mathematics and magic. I think that would be a nice culmination of my interests, but I don't know. I'm just having fun with it.
Happy it'll go a long way. Things
it's,
going.
It really is. It's I perform enough that they're always that they're always enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not work for me. It's nice and it's a great supplement.
Sure.
But it's not. I don't have to perform. Unless I want to.
Because you want to.
I want to. And
what advice would you have for young people, young magicians or potential mathematicians?
Well, I will say that I think magic has got to be one of the best hobbies in the world. And I remembered as a teenager saying that the reason it was great was because you could profit from this hobby without having to sell it. you know, a stamp collector, coin collector, comic collector. Well, eventually, if they want to make money from it, they have to give part with it. Yeah. Here, as magicians, right. all we have to do is display it and show it off, and we get to keep it and
learn the secrets.
Exactly. Right. You know, I think that. But as an adult, what I have found to be so great about magic is how it has helped me outside of the magic profession. I mean, within the mathematics community, they know me as one of those guys, one of those mathematicians that does magic. Yeah. You know, it's resulted in lots of speaking opportunities where they're saying, "Well, who could we get as a mathematician that could present to a general audience in an entertaining way?" Mm-hmm. I learned more about being a teacher, a college professor, from my 4 years of being the great Benjamini than anything I ever learned in college or graduate school.
How to get up in front of people.
It's how to get up in front of people. It's dialogue. It's, you know, I mean, what are the rules for entertaining with children? Well, number one, audience participation, right? You need to have a well-structured script. You have to know your material and have some humor in there and all those things. So when I got up in front of my first college classroom as a teaching assistant when I was a college student, you know, I couldn't, the only way I could think of talking to the audience was the way I had been talking to audiences for the past 6 years, which was audience participation. You know, it's not just a monologue, me talking about the math. It's a back and forth process. If I could think of a fun example or punchline that would really make the topic memorable, so much the better. Occasionally, but very occasionally, I'd actually bring magic into the classroom if I felt that it would illustrate a concept, maybe in probability or number theory or something. But it was more the whole being comfortable in front of an audience and I think developing an engaging personality. My teaching persona is much more animated than I am just sort of normally in person. So
and probably most other teachers, I would think.
And it's resulted in, exactly.
That's why people don't like math sometimes. They think, oh man, just more numbers, there's guys writing on a board.
That's right.
You know, when you're more animated and they can feel and
if
sense.
They're excited about it. I mean, look at it this way.
You're breaking that fourth wall.
You're trying, if I can get my math students to say, "How did you do that?" I've won.
There you go.
That's, you know, and so it's the same. It's almost the same goal as a magician, right? Yeah. You want your audience to want to know how you accomplished what you did, and so I just think so. So I will say to the young magicians and aspiring magicians, and I would say when I was in high school and even early college, if you asked me what my dream job would be, I would have said a magician, because I loved performing and I still do. But you know, I think if you were to ask me now, I would say find a way of doing both. I mean, yes, there are a handful of people out there who make 100% of their income through magic, but I think you can accomplish, I'd say, a lot more, maybe even earn more in your magic income by having two professions, if you will. A lot of the speaking engagements I get are through the mathematics community.
Sure.
So because I'm heavily involved in that other industry, then I'm a natural person to bring.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, so my advice to the young people listening is, you know, use your magic, and it can be, I've seen it do so much good. All the other teenage magicians who I was running or who I ran around with back in my high school days, this was growing up in Cleveland, Ohio, I don't know if any of them have stayed on in magic, but they've gone on to, one of them owns a candy store, and one of them, and you know, and would do magic for the birthday parties and stuff at there. You know, one of them's a director and a mime. And one of them is, was a screenwriter and wrote a play that involved Houdini. And I'm just thinking, you know, use your magic. But it,
It should join together and melt. I'm thinking, for an example, like of Gene Anderson, of someone who certainly, you know, he worked for DuPont, and there was someone, you know, who, when he was going out and speaking and they were going to, you know, give him retirement, he said, well, you know, I don't know. I said, I think I will. And then they said, well, we think you should stay, because what would you do? And he said, well, I'll probably go out and doing some speaking and doing some magic. Because you're already doing it, so why don't we continue to pay you? So he has joined, you know, his profession with his...
I asked Gene Anderson, because Gene has a PhD in chemistry, and I, you know, and here was I, a high school kid, and I saw, and people would point to him. They said, "Well, here's," I said, "Well, should I go on and get my PhD, or should I, you know, perform magic?" I mean, I could have made a living, maybe not a huge living, but I could have made a living with just performing and doing magic. But Gene gave me similar advice that I think I'm saying here, which was keep all your options open and
continue to study.
Continue to study. You'll use all of your education will come in handy, and conversely, your magic will come in handy tremendously in whatever profession you go into.
To that ability to interact with other people and confidence in your stage presence, when you're going to be even a salesman, because you feel more confident being a salesman, certainly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so that's what I think I tell youngsters as well, you know, to stay in school and that, to study marketing. You should know theater, some dance, perhaps. I mean, if you really want to go into some of these kinds of things, because you might find another passion that you really enjoy within marketing or business or whatever.
I remember when I was even as a high school student, I remembered that Mark Wilson saying how he got an MBA, you know, and the ability to speak to business executives was a very, very important skill.
Exactly.
And I entered college actually thinking that I was going to major, get a bachelor's degree in math, and then follow that up with an MBA, and who knew what, you know, have a job and perform. And along the way, I found that because I got such a positive reaction from my teaching, I said, well, this is fun. I was getting the same kind of feeling that I get when I'm in front of a classroom.
Yeah.
I mean, as when I was in front of an audience. Yeah. And I said, wow, this isn't work. This is play. This is fun. You know, I'm not getting applause, but I'm getting, people are saying, wow, this, you know, you make this really interesting. You make this fun.
And you change people's lives. And the way that magic changes lives of people.
To get back to the DVD courses, my first course for the teaching company, for the great courses, was called The Joy of Mathematics. And it's everything from algebra to calculus, with emphasis on stuff that I just found joyful, whether it be the number pi or Fibonacci numbers or mathematical games or mathematical magic. What was it that I found really fun and joyful about math? And we're talking over 100,000 people have purchased this course, my mental math course. The same thing, you know, and I get letters, emails every week from people who are grateful to how it has turned a lot of people on to mathematics, both kids and adults, and that's just so gratifying.
Well, it's getting closer to the time. I think we have to have a curtain call. I think I gotta get my makeup.
Can I do a calculation for you? Let's do a quick a warm up or two. Give me a 3-digit number, and I will square it as fast as a calculator.
285.
285 squared is 81,225.
Okay, you at home?
You can rewind and check that one. Absolutely.
Okay. Very good. Wow. And so in wrapping up, which is great, what is your magic word? My podcast is called the magicwordpodcast.com. So what would be your magic word? Not necessarily something that you would use, you know, on stage or something, but it might be perhaps a life motto or a creed or something that you would live by.
I'm glad you asked that. Let me think about that. I know in the classroom what students respond to is relevance and elegance.
Relevance and elegance. Ooh, I like that.
Show them something that they either think that, wow, I can really use this, or just show them something that's just so beautiful and cool that they're that they enjoy it.
And that can apply to magic, certainly, as well.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
Arthur, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. And so I hope you guys got a lot out of this as I did. Go back and listen to this a couple times. There's some really good stuff in there. Thanks, Arthur, very much.
Pleasure.
It's great. So for now, and we'll talk to you after the show on the other side. This is Scotty out. Well, Well, the evening gala show is over, and we are now back at the Royal Hotel, just having a few beers and just kind of getting to know each other and having a good time. Of course, this was a one-day convention. A lot of people came into town and back out, so some are out. And I was going to mention we've got one of the fellows also who was on the show this evening. Have Colin McLeod. Hey, Colin.
Oh, hey, May. How's it going?
Excellent. And Tim Stacey, and you've been involved with the... Tim, tell us from...
I've been on the committee helping organize it from Bristol, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
now, is this not your first year, I assume?
No, not my first year being here, but my first year on the committee.
Not your first rodeo.
No, I'm not a virgin there. No,
okay.
That's right.
At the conventions or...
Nice
to see you again, Tim.
What am I saying?
Yeah, no, it's disgusting. Yeah, but I like it.
Yeah, don't say out loud what he's thinking. Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very graphic.
Yeah.
It is.
So it's been a very good convention. I was going to ask, do you have any idea about what the attendance was with the general registration?
I don't, but it was way up on last year.
Does that mean like 400-ish?
Yeah, it's about 400. It's the biggest one-day convention in the country.
It's phenomenal. I mean, I need to actually say, until I got here last night, I didn't appreciate just how big the convention was actually going to be, because I thought, and I'm with the greatest respect, was comparing this to other one-day conventions, and I'm thinking, you know, it's going to be great fun. I got here earlier, and it was unbelievably busy. And even your gala show, I don't know if it was completely sold out, but I was on stage, and I couldn't see an empty chair anywhere, you know. So the fact that you guys have managed to sell out 600, 800
theaters.
What was good, I think what was good, it wasn't just magicians.
Right.
It was when we had the cheer earlier on.
Yes,
it seemed,
I could hear
it was,
so many people upstairs.
It was a lot of non-magicians, which I think was really good, because at the end of the day, that's what we're about. You know, it was entertainment, and I think it was a good day for that.
So it wasn't sold out last year, as far as the
No, we sold more tickets this year. We sold more tickets this year also.
I think, by the way, can I also say that the lineup that you guys have and have crammed into one day, that's easily a two-day convention in the space of one day. I normally, if I'm lecturing, it's usually like at least 90 minutes, and you guys are like, right, 50 minutes. I'm like, but I've got 90 minutes, and you're like, well, do it in 50, you know?
Plus time to sell stuff, yeah.
Oh, totally, but...
I mean, we've got to rethink that. If we can rebirth this convention, make it really big, it could be a two-day thing.
The fact you're Joshua J, I can't remember all the names that you've got at the moment, and I'm looking going, and you're cramming all that in one day, and I'm thinking, compared to other conventions, you know, wow, that's...
Lots of big stage show. There, you know, I've never seen Arthur Benjamin. I've seen him on YouTube.
Yeah.
He went down really well tonight.
It's all an earpiece, though, isn't it? That's... Right. Is it real? Yeah. Oh, my God. Right, okay.
He's the original Rain
Man. Wow, new appreciation for what you did there, then. That's really impressive. I didn't know... No, not at all. It was brilliant. And you were doing an excellent job comparing as well, so well done to you.
Did you enjoy it?
I had a great time.
What did you get out of it?
Good question. Thank you, Tim. People usually don't ask me questions.
I know. I'm reversing it.
I'm now holding the mic. So, yeah, Scott, tell us, what do you feel?
You know, I enjoyed it just because I was relaxed. I didn't have to do anything until this evening. You know, I had all my preparation done as far as introductions with everybody.
I think as a compere, it was quite nice that you got to go around the convention, get a feel for the acts, get to know them.
Yes.
And I said to you, you and I shared the dressing room in the end, and watching the preparation you put in to bring people on stage, I was blown away by the uniqueness of every individual, and I'm thinking, the work that you've put in to do that, I mean, that's
I was surprised.
So
I was very surprised.
In a good way, though.
Every act you had a way to present them, and that was nice.
Credit to you for that.
And I mean,
you and I were in the dressing room, and you showed me the work, and not even all of it, you hadn't finished yet, the work that you put into for that, so well done for that.
Thank you. Well, and so you're right, I did have time today because sometimes when I'm at a convention, another thing that I do is that I have a sit-down, and I kind of do like a TV talk show, kind of a chat thing, where I have a couch and a chair and everything, so it's like an evening
show. I'll also tell Tim right now, the best thing I've seen at a Magic... Second best thing. The best thing I've seen at a Magic convention now is a dove getting loose.
Well, that was
and
nice.
Watching magicians capture it. And if you follow me on Twitter, you'll now see the video to that. But the second best thing I've seen at a convention was you and I in Vegas. You were doing your seance, and you lit a candle, and you held the silk above it, and you set the silk on fire, and the entire room, 300 people all shout, Scott!
But you jump
back, and that extinguishes the flame in the silk, and you say, it's totally fine. That was an amazing moment. That was one of my absolute magical highlights. lights.
I regale
and tell him that story everywhere I go. It's a great story.
Well, you're like a son to me. You're one of my boys.
We go way back.
It was so great to come back and see some mates, you know, like when you said the con's going to be here, it's like, there's no question, I really, really want to
come.
And
you and I chatted a few months ago, I still don't remember, I know this isn't about just this, but come back to Vegas, the first time you and I, and I heard the interview the year before from Mindvention with In-N-Out Burger, and getting your son's t-shirt, and then next year, I'm straight to In-N-Out Burger, you know, and I was there, a few months ago we were there again, recently, and do you know, it's mind-blowing the fact that we actually get paid to fly all over the world.
Isn't that a wonderful thing?
I'm just really hoping they eventually don't catch on that we're actually getting a free all-expense-paid holiday to go catch up all over in Vegas and Bristol. Wonderful.
I have some plans for Bristol Day Magic. And I don't know if you realise, but Bristol Day Magic's not in Bristol, it's in Weston.
Well, this is the thing as well, because I said to you, when I get off the airport at Bristol, where do I go? You went, the other direction.
So my plan is, actually, what we do is Bristol Day Magic in Vegas.
Yes. Oh, man. That's a good idea.
So we call it Bristol Day Magic.
No, it's amazing. Anywhere. Why not?
An amazing burger restaurant called In-N-Out. They do great t-shirts, and the animal fries are exceptional. So
I think that's the future. Yeah. Don't you?
That's the way forward. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'd had several people who had sent me emails about that, said that was just a brilliant idea, going to In-N-Out. Said I love that.
Oh, mate, honestly. And I was there recently, and Ken Weber introduced me recently to a guy called David Gerard, who, I don't know if you've seen him yet.
No.
That when you see this guy, he's like the only mentalist at the moment I'm watching going, wow, that's how I want to be doing it. He's unbelievably good. I met him at Vegas, and he and I, first night, we'd gone to see Doc Hilford's Q&A lecture, and straight after that to In-N-Out Burger, and honestly, I sat the entire time thinking, this is all because of Scott Wells. So the lasting memory of In-N-Out is based on you, and you're looking for the t-shirt for your son.
My son Nick. Yep.
So good for you, and thank you, because if you're ever in, is it only Vegas or is it?
It's actually a Western thing, so they've got them in California and Arizona and a few places.
I'd like to say though, guys, both of you, thanks for coming and making the show. It's all about you guys and the audience and everything.
I mean, I feel like you've really taken the conversation away from In-N-Out Burger there, Tim, which is
I've never been to In-N-Out Burger. Maybe I should go.
Bristol Magic Convention.
Maybe I should go to In-N-Out Burger. Sorry, what's it called? In-N-Out Burger, did you say?
Well, I think if we go back to the convention for a minute, the value that you guys have crammed into one day, genuinely, I'm blown away with. That you guys are honest, and I know I've said it already, but the lineup that you guys have, the acts that you had in your gala show, I look at and think, that's at least two nights worth right there.
We put a lot of work into choosing everyone. I mean,
I've also seen you guys running about all day, making sure that all the acts are taken care of, looking at the delegates and making sure that they're happy. I mean, the effort you guys have put in to make sure this is as successful as, you know, it clearly is brilliant. And the fact that you even then, you invite a compere specifically as a compere and nothing else, so he can focus on playing that role perfectly.
Yeah.
I think that's testament to how good a job that you guys
are
looking.
Having somebody do everything, you know, it's like, I'm going to have you do this. Yeah.
We should at this point bring in somebody.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, there's many people we should bring in, but as he runs off to grab the somebody specific.
Because you're talking to me, but to be fair,
Mandy's the
boss.
A lot shorter now.
Too busy making sure the delegates are still happy at this time of night.
Mandy is the boss, so I think we should ask Mandy some questions.
We talked earlier.
We did.
And so now the day is over and you can relax.
Your high heels are off.
I'm a lot shorter, aren't I, with my heels?
No, I just feel a lot taller.
Do you always wear heels?
Tall, am I?
I realise, but I always seem higher than that.
You know, it's the perfect height for you. Can I just say, it really is.
You're talking about how,
as opposed to that.
Oh, too high, too high.
Too high.
High heels are back on now. It's too high.
Yeah.
Colin, you have insecurity about your height, obviously.
What?
What's going to happen? I'm not very tall. I'll take them off. Yeah.
It's the perfect height for you.
Thank you.
If you're any taller, it wouldn't work. So good. Well done.
Okay. Thank you for that.
We were talking too much to do.
And Mandy, I was just saying about the fact that the lineup is, you've got too much happening in one day. It could easily be a full Saturday, Sunday.
But it wasn't like it was so full that, you know, they couldn't do anything else. You know.
It was almost like every lecture. I mean, my lecture, I
everybody wanted longer, didn't they? Schomar was talking at 50 million miles an hour, and he wanted an hour and a half.
Would you? Well, I said to Scott a second ago, normally I do at least 90 minutes, but I did 90 minutes. Sorry, I did 50 minutes what I would normally do in 90. I didn't take maybe as many questions, but I still got all the, you know, the key bits across. And I think everyone's leaving here thinking, I want more. And I think you'd rather have an audience.
Let's do it again tomorrow then.
Well, I thought you winked at me as well. There was wonderful. But do you know what? It was great. It was full on. But I mean, would you rather come to a one-day convention and feel like, wow, I got real value for money, or a two-day where you think, oh, it dragged, we're in the bar a lot?
Good question. You summed up, though,
Colin.
You summed up,
though. You guys have properly oversold one day, and it's
only 38 pounds. That is the best value I would think for any convention.
But that's the traditional one-day rate, especially, you know. So the fact that you guys get
with
2 days
at the
gala show, with the gala show too,
and in a proper theater. It's a nice theater, isn't it?
I love that theater.
Yeah,
and what is
you did really well.
Yeah, had a nice
thank you.
Nice dressing room and everything back there. Thank you very much.
And we shared in the end. I mean, I had my own, but I thought I want to share. Sorry, would I rather have my own on the top floor or share with Scott Wells? I'm going to share with Scott. I know how to roll.
Yeah, sleeping everything in there.
Absolutely, everything.
So, how many people did you actually end up having?
I have no idea at all.
Okay, he was just saying
400, 450, maybe.
Do you want to ask about the highlight and the lowlights?
What Tim said.
The lowlights. There was this mentalist called Colin MacLeod or something. He's from Scotland.
No idea
what he was on about.
I had no idea. He spoke way too fast.
Yeah. And there was the compere. And the compere, I don't know if you met him, but he's from Dallas or something. I don't know.
Could have gotten somebody better.
No, really good. Really pleased. I'm happy now.
So you're pleased? Everything.
I'm pleased now.
You ready to start for next year?
Oh, yes.
Got a lot of thinking to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to know what people would like to see, because we don't want the Bristol Dev Magic just to be a clone of other conventions or like a mini Blackpool.
I really don't think it is.
The workshops this
The only consistent for Blackpool is the title Winter Gardens. Apart from that, you guys are completely separate.
Do you think a two-day thing? You both from
at the same time, though, you've got something very unique in the
you drag it out. It can be like you said, it can be too draggy over 2 days.
I think maybe we'll say this, like maybe £38 is too cheap for the full. I mean, it was non-stop, I can only base this on this year, but it was non-stop value throughout the day. All the main dealers here, for me the highlight though is the fact you someone like Joshua J here. And I mean, Joshua, in my opinion, is someone at the height of his.
Right.
And the fact he comes here and spends a day doing close up, then the lecture, the Q&A.
And where is he now? Why is he not in the bar?
Because
wow.
He's got to catch an early flight.
Yeah,
All right, we're going to get back over here then. We seem to have had a little glitch there for a moment, but we're over here then with Mandy Davis.
So we just recorded for 39 minutes and we got none of that, so we've now got to fill it in. So I think we were saying, you know, Bristol's brilliant, Mandy Davis from the Magic Circle Juniors is here, who's wonderful, does an excellent job.
Mandy Davis, who edits the magazine and used to be chair of the Young Magicians Club, who's now
handed
that job over.
And you and I used to both be young magicians as well, so we're...
run a junior workshop here in Bristol.
Well, Mandy and I, one day, that's where Mandy and I met back in the day, so...
We did. That's what it's about.
I let her say something about Bristol, my lovely. Clifton Bridge, my lovely. That's what Bristol's all about. Clifton Bridge. It's a f***ing long bridge. And I worry, every time I go across, I worry the f***ing thing's going to let go and I'm going to end up down in the sea and I'm going to end up drowning down in Plymouth or somewhere weird or some bloody thing. And look, now your phone's gone flat.
And I mean, we've just found, you know, a local Bristol member of the audience there who's joined us for that conversation. But I mean, we also begs the question of where is Max Somerset now? So it comes full circle, you know. That's the beauty of it.
To have a career as a magician, and now he's just
now he's a drunk Bristol local. So
they play Bristol once on the way up and once on the way down. Please meet Colin and Max.
Does that mean I'm on the way up?
Does that mean I'm on the way down?
I want to get this man to the magic circle, Max. He's got to come brilliant. To this circle.
And yeah. you've heard that right on Bluetooth right here, so that's happening. Right, that's
definitely.
But no, I think, you know, you've done an excellent job here. The magicians are the young magicians. What age were they from? About 8?
The young magicians cover runs from 10 years old up to 18. Which? Once they're 18, they can then apply to join the magic circle.
And Max, I think it's right to say that as much as you and I enjoy doing, you know, this at the moment, in 30 years when you and I get to sit back and enjoy what's new and current, I mean, without these young magicians with the help of Mandy at the moment, I mean, I think magic, in a word, would be absolutely, I mean, maybe not that word, but we'll go with stuffed.
Yes, I think we have inspired a generation.
Absolutely. And Max particularly. Colin is inspiring the generation yet to come.
Yes, he is.
But Max has inspired a generation through his TV shows. And they are very, very important.
That looks thicker than this envelope feels thicker than mine.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice program was a turning point for young magicians.
And that was their Sorcerer's Apprentice.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice,
yep,
yes.
Had some BAFTA awards.
It won BAFTA, which is the British Arts Founder Film and Television Awards.
Yeah.
Max has won awards for his Sorcerer's Apprentice program, which started an upsurge of young magicians, which has now continued with the advent of Dynamo, the Penn and Teller Fool Us program, and obviously Ben Earl, who is going to be the latest.
I won't say
and Colin McLeod, whose voice is louder than mine, and doesn't let me finish my sentences, might, if he's lucky, become a magic icon to the youth, but he has to be very lucky. Sometimes he has to know when to shut his mouth.
Well, I'm bringing you up here. I'm agreeing with everything you're saying.
You know,
I only found out how old Ben was actually earlier today, but you're right. I mean, someone like, I mean, Dynamo, excellent. But for me, Ben Earl, someone who has properly spent years, you know, perfecting his craft, who is an absolute perfectionist, and TV, as far as, so Darren Brown, as we'll say he's mentalism for a minute, as far as magic shows go, in the last 5-6 years, I mean, Ben Earl show, I think young magicians watching that need to appreciate the talent, the skill.
See, young guy, I'm not familiar with Ben Earl.
Oh, mate, you need to watch this. He's taken the idea
he's
of magic.
He's taken magic to another
he's
level.
Taken, yeah, I mean,
magic or mentalism or
both.
A bit of both.
Both.
Magic, preferring the magic, but I mean, slightly mentalism. But the sophistication that is added, he's going to take magic and move it from being a trivial, I think, thing. From magic shows, which in the UK the most recent one was magicians with the celebrities mixed in. Now, I know the original concept wasn't to have the celebrities there, but I still think the show was great. The magicians, I mean, Barry and Stewart, in my opinion, are two of the best magicians I've ever seen.
Now,
John
Archer.
I mean, that's
of course.
John Archer
and supply teacher is a magician.
I mean, the thing is, John Archer in himself. I mean, John himself is just. He's fantastic.
He doesn't have a show, does he?
Oh no, he does. He's
does he?
Yes.
And also Helmut Sly Teacher is magic are doing a show at the Edinburgh Festival this year as well. It just got announced, so they're doing a show. So it's a family show. So any families looking for something to do, I think it's at 1:15 ish. So it's a lunchtime show. Families looking for something, I mean, go see it. I mean, go support this. It's great. It's in Edinburgh. It's for the full month. The fact that we've got John Archer.
When is this?
It's all of August.
All of August.
And every day.
That'll explain why my ex will be missing all through.
Oh, totally, absolutely.
What is Paul Daniels doing now?
He's Max Somerset's ex. So I mean, really, he doesn't do anything. He's Paul Daniels, of course. He can do whatever he likes. But John Archer. Alex is in there as well. The other guys in that show. I mean, they're all brilliant. And the fact they're bringing magic to a new generation, all great, absolutely. And I mean, even then, I'll go back to Ben for a second. I mean, Ben's show, the magic in that is just so wonderful. The stuff that he and Mark Elton have created is just. I mean, you watch it, and I mean, regardless of how exactly the magic is just incredible.
You're impressed, obviously.
I honestly, mate, I've been excited about it for a little while, and
really,
the fact that these guys have managed to do a TV show on Channel 4 prime time and do magic that's never been seen before, I mean, that in itself is just brilliant. It's great. So for young, just to bring it back to
to Mandy for a second, because this is really why I shouted Mandy over. To bring this back to Mandy, the fact that these young magicians have got the chance to see now these guys in their prime. I mean, I think we're in a wonderful age of magic. But yeah, do you know what, Dynamo, do you know what? Good on him. He's great. He's real life. The fact you've got Ben, you've got Darren, you've got Penn and Teller, you've got John Archer, you've got Alex all on Help My Supply Teacher's Magic. I mean, I think that's the main. Oh, Pete Furman as well, who's just a joy. Barry and Stuart. I mean, these guys who are wonderful, not just at the magic, but at the presenting it. I think too often people are quick to say that young magicians are very good at showing magic on YouTube.
Right.
And these guys are a great inspiration to show not just how to do amazing methods, but how to present it. The fact that so many young magicians in the UK right now have so many resources to see that is great. Not just on TV, but now, you know, DVDs. You've got Joe Barry bringing out stuff. You've got... The list.
These guys are teaching them, don't just be technically good, actually have a persona and be personable.
But not just personable, don't just be the guy on the DVD. I mean, you so often see young magicians, and I have, who do a Daniel Garcia routine as Daniel Garcia.
Yeah.
Don't be Daniel Garcia. Know that you, as a performer, are adequate enough to be you as a performer.
But that's because they don't read books, they're watching DVDs and they're copying how something's done on YouTube or how it's done on a DVD. They're not reading a book and interpreting it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, this is coming from another Bristol local who's joined us as well, who seems to know his magic.
Chris Stockstrange, hello.
Absolutely. How do you, mate? Are you well?
I'm alright, yeah.
Good. But you know, I mean, you and I know, Chris, that it really isn't about method, it's about how you present it. So many of these young kids, I mean, earlier today with the young magicians, I jokingly said to each of them, show me your best move. I mean, the stuff, I can't even describe how it was beautiful, is what it was.
You see a lot of that on YouTube?
You see a lot of that on YouTube, right? But credit to these kids, they could then engage me in conversation and explain why they think that that's relevant to magic.
Did they actually talk as well? Or did
Yeah. Okay, so but like I'm saying, this is a great thing, is that it wasn't just about
the move.
It was about them using that to engage the person.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Do you know what? It was brilliant. And the fact that some of them get that already, and the fact that some of the other one, the kids who maybe aren't doing that yet, see that, is brilliant.
I've got to say, Colin, since I've been doing the kids' parties, literally over the last few months, and I think it's down to because of the Help My Supply Teachers and Magician and the Penn and Teller Foolers, I've got 6 and 7 year olds coming up to me saying, I do magic, can I show you a trick? And I'm thinking, yeah, what are they going to... And they're actually doing nice little card tricks or making a coin vanish or something.
Yeah.
Or they're asking me and they're saying, what do you think about this? And I'm thinking, these are little kids. And then I'll say, what's your favourite? They like Tricky TV. Apparently that's big. They watch a programme called The Slammer. They have magicians on there. All these different programmes that are out there, that it's getting these kids interested, is really exciting.
I think you said there, Chris, is that these kids clearly care about what they do. And you know what? Regardless of where they're at the moment, their presentation, their skill level, the fact that they care about what it is we do, that when we are gone, unfortunately, in time, the fact that we've got a generation of people that care about what it is we do, that's more important
than
any slight.
Or get it into good hands.
Yeah,
after this.
Absolutely.
Good. All right. Well, I think that's kind of a good place to wrap here then, right now. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it. Thank you, Chris. Glad you guys stopped over here.
See you, Chris.
Thank you, Colin.
Thank you, Scott, and well done again tonight.
Thank you, Mandy, and everybody else. And so
we'll
kind of see how this all stitches together.
Her work.
I got shouted down by all these male voices.
No, we're just saying thanks for
that's the thing. When Mandy's in the scene, everyone wants a bit of Mandy. So it's pulled in so many directions.
What I mean? What can I do? This is a female problem as a female magician. You have to try and be louder than the men. It's not always easy.
But we all listen to you. We all want a bit
of
Mandy.
We can ever say is we're prettier than they are.
That's for sure.
No, trouble with
this woman is she comes and she gives without fear.
I'd be careful. Yeah.
Well, if I've learned anything today, it's that Mandy is absolutely passionate about the future of magic and the generation that's coming next. So credit to Mandy. And for me, I didn't say the two highlights were obviously Mandy, the fact that the gala show promotes live magic.
And I sent her away.
I mean, ignore that completely. But
there was a time when she came and stopped me from shaking.
But no, for me, the two highlights, genuinely, Mandy and her Young Magicians Club. It was you that organised it, and you told me what to do. I did what you told me, so it was all down to you. The gala show with live acts who actually got on stage and show how to do it.
That's what magic's about. If that's at a convention like this, then, I mean, that's totally brilliant. So credit to Bristol for doing that.
Did a great job. Thank you guys very much. Wow, you got a lot of stuff there. Enjoy that. This is Scott Wells from the Bristol Day of Magic.
Internet Burger Racer.
That's right, Scotty.